Go. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Pycod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Front porch on the horn. We've got 3 hours tonight and then 3 hours Monday, and then it's time for Agnes, me, and the kids to sing Bingo Jed Had a Light On. No, that's Big Old Jet Airliner. Wait, that's the same joke as last night! But time is winding down here, and we are furiously, I don't mean like angrily, but as in its more classical sense, furiously struggling to get ready for the big trip, because as I've said before, moving this family across the street is like moving the children of Israel across Sinai, and from here to Las Vegas, my God, the horror, I might even shave my head and go all Colonel Kurtz, just trying to get them there. It's not are we ready for Vegas, it's is Vegas ready for us, and some comments on that later. Thanks to a couple of you who kindly contributed to the ongoing July fund to keep things going here in wild, wonderful, almost level West by God, the Horn, and the studios thereof. Thank you very kindly. As I have mentioned before, July has been a dry time, save for a few contributions, kind contributions, and our blessed regulars, without whom we would be totally, completely, utterly, and undeniably sunk. So, thanks for that. If you can contribute, you know where and you know how. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. There's a tab at the very top called Contribute. There's a PayPal button there. And there's also a snail mail address for those of you who don't like to use PayPal. We have recurring expenses every month. And I don't, I frankly, unless it gets really, really hairy, scary, like it did with the, shall we say, plumbing crisis that you so generously responded to. I don't give half the details. But there we go. So if you can hit the button, gosh, we'd appreciate it, because the problem lies in the fact that with me not on the air mentioning this persistently, it doesn't happen. It just doesn't. But to keep this going is an ongoing expense and an ongoing effort, of which you supply the lion's share of the expenses. And for that, we do remain eternally, immeasurably, and almost unspeakably grateful. So it is Friday on the front porch. It is warm, hot even. As hot as it got a couple of weeks ago, I suspect that the dog days of August will be upon us soon, if they're not already here. And it's for here in the hills, it's plenty warm, and the humidity, well, you know, it's air you can wear. It's air that when breathed has a certain damp quality to it. It's, well, it's like being in a steam room, not a sauna, but a steam room. Trust me on this. It's not the dry heat of the Vegas desert. But still, it's nice, and I've got a ton of work to do between now and leaving. I've got to cut the acre that the mansion sits on, mow it, that is, and do a bunch of weed eating and all those things that you have to attend to before you leave a place. Ferocious attack dogs will be inside the house while we are gone. That's for the right-wing turd burglars out there who are thinking, hey, let's screw Bob over. No, no, no. There will be ferocious attack dogs, not to mention rabid magic possums. The house is going to be full of them. Absolutely. So, you know, just a word to the wise is sufficient. But it's Friday on the front porch, so by all means, come on up on the porch, kick your boots up on the rail, or flip your flip-flops off, grab something out of the old zinc galvanized washtub over there, one of those long necks sticking up out of the ice with that rock salt on top of it, making it all the colder in this heat. Or reach for the sweet iced tea jug and pour yourself a glass. We've got an ice bucket over there with an ice pick. Easy with the ice pick. It's a tool, not a weapon. But we're going to have some fun tonight. We got a lot of things to talk about this evening, not the least. By the way, for those of you who have never been, come on over to the headonradionetwork.com chat room and participate in the conversation. You know, the chat room will be up and running while we are gone to Vegas. It'll be open during the sessions, the various panel discussions that we cover, as well as the plenary sessions. I heard news today that Van Jones will be one of the plenary session speakers, a keynoter, if you will. And I look forward to that, and I am trying. No promises. You know, I'm only me. I'm just that little hillbilly from the hills. But I'm trying to see if something can be done about working up an interview with him. That would certainly be nice. You're going to hear a lot of stuff coming from Netroots Nation, some of which you will see coming from Netroots Nation, which will be incredibly cool as well. Because we are taking a video camera with us for live broadcast purposes. We're taking two, as a matter of fact. So, cross your fingers. This could be exciting. So, you know, jump in for all of that. Just typing there for a minute. Just bear with me. Starting at the top, a little news from here in the Mountain State. And, you know, sometimes I feel funny about doing West Virginia-oriented news because this is, you know, give me your input on this. Is it too much? Because I live here and I can't help commenting on it. But this one seems to have import outside West Virginia. We have a new senator. And by new, I mean new as in newly appointed and damn near newborn. 36-year-old Cart Goodwin. And that's C-A-R-T-E. Cart Goodwin. Has been appointed to fill or warm the chair for what Joe Manchin assumes will be his Senate seat come November. August, September, October. Yeah, November. 3 months. I guess he's going to insist we call him senator forevermore now. Cart Goodwin is a cipher. Cart Goodwin is a very well-connected young 36-year-old lawyer who worked as a communications guy for Joe Manchin in the governor's office. And he represents the depths to which Joe Manchin had to sink in order to find somebody to put in Robert Byrd's seat till he waits to be coronated God or King or Universal Monarch or the Dear Leader or Wise Lord or whatever it is that Joe Manchin expects to be. Because one of the words you can't use with Joe Manchin is statesman. He is no statesman. See, you can't put former Governor Gaston Caperton or former Governor Bob Wise in there because they might... You know how it is when you sit down in a comfortable chair? I'm doing it here. If we had video, you'd see it. It'd be real icky. But, you know, your butt kind of wiggles around on that comfortable chair until it finds just the right place. And, ooh, wait, this is a comfortable chair. You can't put Bob Wise or the Gaston Caperton in that chair because they're going to find that comfy spot. And the next thing you know, they're going to be filing to run in the Democratic primary for that Senate seat, and that will just screw up Joe Manchin's plans 17 different ways from Sunday, upside down and backwards. Because, you see, this is a seat that Joe Manchin deems to be his. He owns it. It belongs to him. It's supposed to be his! And it has taken him weeks to find someone that he could use the mansion magic, otherwise known as threatening to put a horse's head in his bed, to leverage into being a happy cipher. Cart Goodwin, I don't know whether he's old enough for us to send him champagne to celebrate, to congratulate him, or whether we need to send him a blanket and a binky. Jesus God, he's a baby. Who goes to the Senate at age 36 that wasn't, you know, a founder of this nation? Henry Clay, he's not. Daniel Webster, he ain't. I mean, there's a whole bunch of people that he's not. Robert Byrd, he certainly isn't. A statesman, he's not. But what he is a creature who may be counted upon to get bought and stay bought. Here's how the conversation goes between Joe Manchin and Cart Goodwin. Son, come over here. Come over here, son. You know, son, I've always liked you, son. You've been a good boy. You studied hard, and you worked hard, and you went to a good school. Well, dadgummit, your daddy, I just think the world and all of your daddy. Son, you've got a future. You've got a bright political future in this state. And I tell you what, you just let old Uncle Joe be part of that future, because I want to help you. I want to help you, son, because I believe in you. I believe in you a lot, and I tell you what, you work with me. You work with me, and I tell you what, the future's going to be so bright you're going to have to wear them Ray-Bans you bought down to Myrtle Beach for the rest of your days just to keep from going blind from how bright your future is. Now, son, here's how it's going to go. I'm going to name you senator. And you're going to be happy to be senator, and you're going to say, you're going to make your mouth make some mouth noises about how no one can ever fill the honorable footsteps of Robert Byrd, who took a damn long time dying. I swear to God he did. I thought I'd never get to run for that seat. Oh, wait a minute. What was I saying? And you're going to make some noises about Robert Byrd in the great state of West Virginia, and nobody can fill Robert Byrd's seat, and you're honored to be in the Senate of the United States, and it's going to be a challenge, and you look forward to representing the people of the state of West Virginia. You're going to do all that, son! But let me tell you what you're not going to do, son. You are not going to file to run for that seat, because, son, that's Joe's seat. That's Uncle Joe's seat. That's my seat. God Almighty put me on earth to sit in that chair and dole out corporate favors for the coal companies and whatnot that pull my strings and own my ass. That's my seat, boy. So when Uncle Joe says froggy, you look at Uncle Joe and say, ribbit, how high? And you'll have a bright political future, son. And I'm not talking about some low-ass little delegate position in the House of Delegates of West Virginia. I'm not talking about some piss-ant Senate position in the Senate of West Virginia. No, sir, no, sir, no, sir. By God, I think we can make you a member of the U.S. House of Representatives. You might be governor. You start out over there maybe at the Attorney General's post. Daryl McGraw ain't going to live forever. You be Attorney General for a spell, and then you go over and be Secretary of State for a spell, and then by God, everybody knows who you are, and you run for governor, and you'll be governor. And by then, I'll be getting ready to breathe out and not breathe in again, and you can be senator again. And it'll say, re-elect Senator Goodwin on all your signs. Won't that be fun, son? But, son, it all depends on you being a good boy, because you're youngin' now. And you got to be real nice to Uncle Joe and say lots of good things about Uncle Joe when Uncle Joe runs for the Senate. And you got to get out of the way like a good boy, son. And by the way, everybody going to be talking to you about that global warming, and you just tell them you know that there ain't no such thing. And that what we need to do is make sure that West Virginia coal keeps West Virginia strong. And we need billions for clean coal technology that has never even been proven to be remotely feasible or possible. You tell them we got to keep burning that coal because Jesus loves the coal. Jesus is a coal miner himself, went down into the bowels of hell after 3 days on the cross. Where the hell do you think he was when he was in the underworld? What do you think a coal mine is, boy? It's the underworld, son! Are you listening to me, son? And you know what? Makes me sick. Makes me sick. Because once again, it's a violation of all of that idealism that I got handed as a kid in grade school. And dadgummed if I didn't just spend my 2 weeks studying the very nature of statesmanship and the very essence of political idealism, where we dream of a day where people can be engaged in self-government. And Joe Manchin comes out and hands us a creature. Now, I've never had a beer with Cart Goodwin. I've seen his photograph. The News Ninja Susan tells me that she would neither buy automobile nor insurance from him. Nor would I. No, she said I wouldn't buy a car or a horse from him. Okay, my bad. Hey, boy, wait, I wasn't done talking with you, boy. Get your nose out of that Maximum, put down the For Him magazine, and look over. I'm trying to pass along my political wisdom to you, son. Ain't you listening? You wait till you're out of that Senate, and everybody has to call you senator before you stick your nose in that bottle of 25-year-old Mac Allen scotch, son. And you can hold off on the cigars, too, because you ain't staying. No, Uncle Joe gonna take care of you, son. But, son, you got to take care of Uncle Joe first. See, Joe Manchin was in that sickening sort of political place where he couldn't trust anyone. You know, I had thought all along that what he would do is this sleazy little political swap where he'd name, what's his name? Earl Ray Tomlin. Every time you shake Earl Ray's hand, you feel like you've got to go and be sprayed down with some of that chemical stuff that washes all the sleaze off of you. But he couldn't trust Earl Ray Tomlin not to get all, this chair feels good. I like how everybody watches it, looks at me and says, "Good morning, Senator." I like this. I like this real good. Oh, fella could get comfortable here. Honey, bring me a coffee and a bourbon. Nope, sorry, Earl Ray couldn't be trusted. Joe Manchin discovered very quickly that there was no one in politics in West Virginia that he could trust. After years of lusting, I mean masturbatorily lusting, after the Senate seat of Robert C. Byrd, he finally got his wish. Only to find out that he had painted himself into a corner and had no way of getting into the seat. Until his mind alighted upon Cart Goodwin and he realized that he had his boy. You know, I'm just looking at an email rolling in from Jim. And I think we've got a new name for Joe Manchin. Yep. We got a new name for Joe Manchin. And God, don't it fit. Bless your heart, Jim. I don't know why this never occurred to me. I must be slipping. Absolutely, we have. We've got the perfect epitome of the very nature of Joe Manchin. Yes, we do. My God. And he's going. Here you go.
Saddle, he wore a shining star. His
God, I love Frankie Lane. Oh, yes, 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 yes. We know who Joe Manchin is. It has finally dawned on us who Joe Manchin is. What you got there, is the meeting that Joe Manchin called to figure out how to replace Robert C. Byrd.
We must do something about this immediately. Harumph, 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 harumph. I didn't get a harumph out of that guy.
Give the governor harumph.
Harumph.
You watch your ass.
Any questions? Yeah, and what comes after? The business with Hedley Lamarr? And you could be, dare I say it, oh, say it, Senator. Joe Manchin, and everybody keep reminding me of this, Joe Manchin is Governor LePetitmaine. Work, 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 work. Hello, boys, you miss me? I didn't get a harumph out of that guy. Cart Goodwin, political creature. That's almost as good as Rand Paul, libertarian ophthalmologist. How must it feel? I mean, I'm sure he's feeling quite heady right now, walking back. Jesus Christ! I stepped in shit and came out smelling like a rose! I'm gonna be me a senator! Damn! Me! But after the champagne hangover wears off, after you've said goodbye to Lily von Stupp, what a nice guy. In the wee small hours of the morning, yes, in the wee small hours of the morning, you know how it goes. In the wee small hours of the morning, you can't hide from that mirror anymore, Cart Goodwin.
In the wee small hours of the morning, while the whole wide world is fast asleep.
Yeah, Cart.
You lie awake and think about the girl.
Or governor.
And never, ever think of counting sheep.
No, baby, you're counting shares in coal company stock.
When your lonely heart has learned its lesson.
Which it ain't.
You'd be hers if only she would call.
But he did, and you are.
In the wee small hours of the morning, that's the time you miss her most of all.
See, Frank Sinatra's singing about a girl, and I tell you what, anytime you've ever been heartbroken, you know, what you do is you pull out the bourbon bottle and you put that on. And you will sink so damn low you didn't know you could go that low. But in Cart Goodwin's case, in the wee small hours of the morning, you know, a champagne hangover is the worst damned hangover on earth. Oh, Lord, it's bad. It probably accounts for a lot. Maybe the French Revolution. I don't know. Maybe Marie Antoinette had a really nasty had a nasty bout with a couple of champagne bottles when she said, leave him, let him eat cake. Champagne hangovers are brutal. They're vile. And Cart Goodwin's going to have one of those. And Cart Goodwin's going to wake up and he's going to roll and run. Maybe the wife's going to be over there. I don't know if he's married or not. Don't know if he's even got kids. I don't know. I'm not so much concerned about Cart Goodwin as what Cart Goodwin's acceptance of this post tells me about Cart Goodwin and tells me about modern politics and tells me about the state of so-called statesmanship in this and ever so many other states. Jesus Christ, it didn't even make him run for the office like Scott Brown. Of course, I don't think Cart Goodwin's spread naked for Playgirl or anything. They still publishing Playgirl? I don't know. But he's going to wake up after that champagne hangover. And baby, I got to tell you, when you've had a champagne hangover and you've got the stale taste of decent, even good cigar smoke still clinging to your clothes and inside your mouth, and we're talking about low. But he's going to go in. First, he's going to look around in the bed. He's going to get out of the bed, scratch himself a little bit. You know, we're guys. He's going to look around the bedroom in the wan light of 3 a.m. His head's going to be thundering like it's got, I don't know, Blazing Saddles running through it. And he's going to feel like there's something out of place. There's something missing. No, it's not the... No, nightlight's still there. No, there's my cufflinks from last night. No, but... Goddamn, where's my integrity? I don't see it anywhere. I think I've lost my integrity. Uncle Joe, while we was drinking champagne and smoking cigars last night, did I leave my integrity over to the governor's mansion? Straight out of W.C. Fields. Fields looks at Shemp Howard and says, in the bar, the Black Pussycat Cafe, and says, did I happen to spend a $20 bill in here last night? Shemp Howard says, well, yes, Mr. Susay, you did. Thank God, I thought I'd lost it. Governor Manchin, did I leave my integrity over to... I can't find my integrity nowhere, Governor. Did I leave it to the governor's mansion? Why, yes, son, you did. You did. I asked you for it, and you give it to me. Honest Injun. Fair and square. We shook on it. Don't you remember, son? That's long about your 17th glass of champagne. You said, what did you need with integrity long as you had money, son? Don't you remember? Don't you worry, son. You can get along in West Virginia without no integrity. Generations of coal brokers like me and coal barons and coal company thugs got along just fine without their integrity. You can get along without integrity easier than you can get along without a kidney. Gallbladder ain't nothing. It didn't even hurt, did it, son? We just took that old integrity right away, and you said you was happy to have it gone. Yeah, but Governor Joe, I done give up my integrity, and I ain't even sure what I done with my immortal soul. Well, son, that's all right. Didn't I show you the horns? Shit, I still had my loafers on. You didn't see my cloven hooves, did you, sugar puss? No, I got that, too. And you know what, son? Here's the funny part. I got it in exchange for you warming a chair for 3 months and not getting to say shit without me saying you could say it. You see, son, we had that conversation long about glass of champagne number 35. Damn, I didn't know a human being could honk on Cuban cigars as fast as you could. Them damn things looked like they was made of flash paper. No, see, son, you're going to go up there and you're going to tell them about how global warming is a myth. And you're going to tell them we don't need no global warming legislation. And, son, here's the fun part. You get to squirrel the works for everybody in America because they need your vote, son. And you're going to tell them we can't handicap West Virginia's coal industry on a myth like global warming. And you're going to screw everything over for every living American, every American about to be born, and every American who's going to be born for the next 1,000 years, son! Don't it feel good when you swap away your integrity and your immortal soul? You know what, son? I know you're feeling kind of rough like right now. You know what you need? You just come on right on over here. I got another case of that Dom Perignon and some of that Cristal. I got cases of that shit chilled. You just come on over here to Uncle Joe's and we'll pop another and we'll talk about what a great political future you're going to have again. Mm-hmm. You'll feel fine, son. You'll feel fine. You'll be all right. Because you ain't going to cross Uncle Joe, are you? You ain't going to cross Uncle Joe. No. You're too smart to cross Uncle Joe, ain't you? You wouldn't do that in a million years, would you? Nope, you wouldn't. Because there was another Joe once upon a time. You might remember him.
Now I've got my payment for the service that I gave. They've given me my ticket to this place beyond the grave. I suppose it's kind of funny. I suppose it's kind of sad. Thinking back on all the times we had. But it's kind of hot and smoky in this empty room to hell. And I won't make up the story, cause you know the truth so well. It's much too late to worry that we never had a chance. And when Joe the Georgian gets here, we will dance, dance, dance. When Joe the Georgian gets here, we will dance.
Joe the Georgian, my ass, son. I'm Joe the West Virginian. And you bought, and son, you're going to stay bought. Because that's how it works, son. Now, you just come on over here. We get you another glass of champagne. We get you Bombay Sapphire Martini, Bloody Mary with Stolich Naya Black Label. I got some of that Labrot and Graham's. I think it's about 1,000,000 years old, man. It's good with a little bit of branch water, whatever we got left here in West Virginia. The coal company ain't poisoned. You just come on over, son. We'll have another. You can have anything you want, son. Come on over here, Cart. You just come on over to Uncle Joe's. You can have anything you want. Lesson, it's your integrity. Because, baby, I got that. And I'm keeping that. Oh, yes, I am. Yes, I am. Because I'm Joe the West Virginian. And welcome, son. Welcome to this dark and smoky anteroom to hell. But it's going to be fun till it's time to get your ticket punched, ain't it, son? You going to talk about all them noble coal miners and how we got to preserve the industry? Of course, son, you know how it is about preserving the industry. You preserve the industry till the industry decides to leave and just hope it ain't on your watch. Because then they leave you high and dry and popped and bleeding. Because that's how it is, son. When you put your integrity up to the highest bidder. And son, when you put your integrity up to the highest bidder, well son, After that, you just a thing to be bought and sold. And you done been sold, son. So you just take what you got paid for it. Gonna be about $140,000 a year, I think, plus benefits. You'll do all right by that. Buy you a nice home out in Glade Springs, maybe. It'd be real nice. Folks call you senator till the day you die, just like they did that evil Clark bastard out west that bought himself a Senate seat. He spent money, not integrity. He came out on the front end of the bargain, son. Yeah, see, that's how it works. No, I know, son, I know. You don't give a damn about West Virginia or the people who live here. You don't give a damn about people who are poisoned or children whose teeth rot out in their heads from coal toxins and coal poisons in the water. I know, son, that was not caring about that was part of the price. Well, it was part of the price we bought you for, you see. But see, it's not just them hillbillies. You got a lot of things to stay bought over, son. You've got the entire United States of America to screw. And I tell you what, son, you better stick it in and you better screw hard and screw good and screw fast. Because God help you, because nobody else will, if I catch you getting all squishy about global warming or climate crises. You better watch it, son. You better watch it. Because, you know, they got a phrase. They got a phrase for people who screw up. Oh, yes, they do.
Marion, what are you doing? I hired you as your janitor of this building.
Sanitary engineer. And the name be Zion.
Zion Schmeyen! I'm pulling the plug on this whole cocked affair!
And with God as my witness, you'll never work in this business again!
I came to the right place. Yeah. on the bar. Always plays a double the mitzvah.
Baba plays a double the mitzvah.
That's why when you've been bought, by God, you stay bought. But it's okay. There's all kinds of people out there got no integrity. And they're getting along just fine without it, like I said. Because, you know, human flesh, I could do show clip after show clip after show clip tonight. You remember the scene from Casablanca with Sidney Greenstreet appraising the diamonds? Diamonds. Diamonds are cheap. There are diamonds everywhere. Diamond has flooded the market. The real value is in human flesh. That's what we're talking about. The buying and selling of human flesh. And the human flesh never seeing a penny of the sales price. It's where we are. Joe Manchin, please, you know how Reverbo is always closing his phone calls by saying, make it personal? This ain't the Hillbilly News Hour. This is the American News Hour. God almighty, if liberals and progressive human beings and intelligent human beings had half of the organizational structure of, say, you know, the teabaggers, we'd have his office surrounded before he even got to it and make Cart Goodwin know goddamn sure that it's not okay for him to warm that seat for 3 months with things as important as the climate and the literal future of the planet hanging in the balance while he collects chits on the integrity that he sold for the purpose of warming, not possessing, but warming that seat. Son, don't let that seat get warm under your ass. Every 5-10 minutes, I want you to stand up and sort of run your hands across that seat and walk around a little bit till it gets cold again, because that thing gets warm under your ass, son. Uncle Joe is coming for you. Do you live in Washington? Joe Manchin just screwed you. Do you live in Maine? Joe Manchin just screwed you. Are you in Michigan, Illinois, Indiana, Minnesota, Wisconsin? Joe Manchin just screwed you. You live in Hawaii? Welcome to the screwing. Take a number. Florida? You're in it too. Alabama, Mississippi, Louisiana. You're getting some, too. Joe Manchin's giving it to you hard and fast, baby! Because he knows that you'll sit there and say, thank you, Joe, can I have some more? You know, because we're liberals, we're progressives, and I'm not talking about the Horn family, I'm talking about us at large. We are not prone bringing our voices together choir-like to let people know our displeasure. Jim just wrote in and said, you know, Bob, when you bed with people like this and awake, you know the meaning of the expression? God, Jim. See, I'm reading this one cold. When you bed with people like this and awake, you know the meaning of the expression, a thing of beauty is a joy till sunrise. Remembering the closing scene from A Man for All Seasons, Thomas More asks Richard Rich about the chain of office he was wearing, the Red Dragon, as Attorney General for Wales. Richard, what does it profit a man to gain the entire world, yet lose his soul but for Wales? Exactly. Exactly. This is so sad. It's not sad for me. I know from politics that, you know, there's a story out there that has broken now. No sooner did BP allegedly cap the well than we find out that they were behind the sleazy process that turned the Lockerbie bomber loose, whom doctors said, well, you know, he's only got 6 months to live. You might as well send him home to Libya. And it's years later now, and the guy's sunning himself on the Tripolitan beach. Tripolitan? I don't know. Integrity is for sale. The only problem is most of us that have some of it, well, our brand, they're not interested in making an offer on, and just as well, because you wouldn't sell it and neither would I. No, sir. But I've spent this hour on this topic because, you see, my life has been a long, steep learning curve. And I have tried to profit by my mistakes because it's about the only thing in this world that I will ever have a chance of profiting by. I have no stock portfolios. I have little more than the walls around me. And so all I can profit by is my mistakes. Learn from them. Try not to repeat them. Try to grow in wisdom with every passing day. And try to reach out with my mind into that vast psychic landscape inhabited by every living creature, not simply the humans, but every living creature on the planet. And when I see what Joe Manchin has just done to all of us who are here, and more importantly, the babes in the cradle, for, you know, because Joe's all pro-life. He wants to save the little fetuses. Breaks bread with the West Virginia right to life every year. And yet goes about his business buying and selling the health and well-being of children and said fetuses in this state on a daily basis. It's learning to take that long view, I think, that makes a human. It's learning to think not outside the box, but outside your skull, outside your sphere of personal acquaintance. It's having the ability to imagine, as I mentioned last week about this time, the ability to imagine a tribal family living in a toxic moonscape similar to a mountaintop removal site, literally carrying lumps of burning coal out of it every day for a trifle of pennies, and going home at the end of the day and living in that same infernal, literally, cesspit. And if you can take just a tiny fraction of your mind and try to imagine what it looks like around you and the hopelessness of an existence that you dare not give up, for it is, even in that religious scheme, you're still working crap off, and who, if it's this bad, God only knows what you come back as next time. Anybody who thinks Hinduism is easy hasn't spent any time with it. Or Mongolia. Those plains once dotted with yurts that gave rise to a vast army that changed and colored the entire face of the European continent with giant gouged holes in them, leaching and flowing with deadly poison from a Peabody coal pit. Acres upon thousands of acres broad. To think on that, to feel the winds blowing across the Mongol landscape, and know what has been before, and what is being foreclosed, and foreshortened, and damned well ended, and to hear the first cry of a newborn there, and to know, that a man, thousands of miles away, motivated by nothing more than the naked lust for power, has in his soul said, "Damn that child, for we shall pour poison, Hamlet-like, not only into its ears, but into its nostrils and down its throat, and we shall bathe it and damned well baptize it in filth from coal. We shall do that. We shall do that because it will advance me. For my naked ambition, my untrammeled lust, is the only thing that matters upon this sick and aching planet. Me! I will be senator! And I will have a cipher placeholder until such time as I may be." Think but of the children, and you cannot stand the mere notion of living inside the bat-infested, worm-crawling soul of Joe Manchin for even a godforsaken iota of a second. Think of the child that was mocked by Rush Limbaugh for want of nothing more than food. "Hey, kid, you can go dumpster diving. I hear it's quite popular now." Think of that child. Where's her mother? Where is her father? Out scrambling. Every day another desperate quest, merely to stay alive in the land of the free and the home of the brave, where there are no grocery stores in her neighborhoods but 16 goddamn McDonald's within an easy walk. Think of her. Think of people along the Gulf Coast who, even in their agony, get their electricity from the coal that was ripped and raped and pillaged out of the hills, the oldest in the world, and the particulate waste from which infests their children's lungs, and when baby can't breathe well enough, and they go to the doctor if they can, and the doctor says, "Well, ma'am, your boy's got asthma." Why's he got asthma? Ain't nobody else around here got asthma. Ain't no asthma running the family. Ain't nobody in my family ever had no asthma. Well, ma'am, sometimes these things happen, and we'll just give him a bronchodilator, and he can huff on that any time he gets short of the air. As long as you can afford it. Other than that, he can die. Maybe that stream dribbles and then runs and then pours straight back into the mercilessly ambition-driven soul of Joe Manchin. I could list these circumstances, these people whom I do not know but know as sure as God made little green apples exist. And you see, that is the difference for you, me, us, and the Joe Manchins of the world. We know they exist. We feel concord, common cause, sympathy and empathy with them. And Joe Manchin and others like him feel it not. But you know the political realities. You know that because the Republican minority runs the Senate, you know that we must have 60 votes in order to pass anything even remotely beginning to address the dire and present crisis of climate that affects this planet. And the first litmus test that Cart Goodwin had to pass was to make sure that he wouldn't get all uppity and start thinking about those children himself. Because he, too, apparently, has that tingly feeling in his soul from the first blushing realization of power. Power! Power! This is The Horn. I'm Bob.
When will I be there? I don't know where I'm headed. I am certain all I know is I am on my way.
Thinking ahead means preparing for the future of our children, our grandchildren, and our wild, wonderful West Virginia. Developing our renewable energy resources is the best way to ensure a clean, sustainable way of life and safe, good-paying jobs for generations to come. Here in the Mountain State, our most abundant energy resource is the wind. Our ridges and majestic mountain peaks shape and direct the wind like stones in a mountain stream. Coal River Mountain is the ideal place for developing wind power. The Coal River Mountain Wind Farm will provide us with a source of clean energy and good jobs forever. We have the power to make our future happen now. Be a part of the clean energy solution for West Virginia by visiting coalriverwind.org or call 304-854-2182. That's coalriverwind.org, 854-2182.
It's Thursday, July 15th, 2010.
So far, 2010 is the hottest on record. BP oil disaster stop and go.
But make no mistake, the number one goal is to shut in the well and kill it.
Michigan goes from rust belt to green belt. New developments in the West Virginia coal mine explosion. Plus...
It's alive!
Yes, it's alive, for now. Climate and clean energy legislation is back in the Senate.
All of that and more straight ahead. I'm Brad Friedman of BradBlog.com.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comments.
All over the world, there are places that are drilling that don't have nearly the regulation we have. So by driving the industry off of our shore, we actually drive it to places like the Niger Delta and increase the environmental risk of the world's oceans, not decrease.
So if I understand you there, Senator Mary Landrieu, if we decrease regulation, we improve the environment. Okay, that'll work. Brilliant. This is your Green News Report. Okay, Desi, hottest year on record so far, and yet this isn't making it onto Fox News. I'm confused. I don't understand it. It's as if they're in denial or something.
Shocking, I know, but we'll get to that in a moment. Remember the Upper Big Branch mine explosion in West Virginia that killed 29 miners back in April?
I do, just before the oil disaster, and that knocked it off the front pages.
Yes, now an NPR News investigation has documented a potentially illegal act. Three eyewitnesses say an electrician was ordered by an Upper Big Branch mine supervisor to deliberately disable a methane gas monitor 2 months before the explosion. Now, only one witness would speak on the record to NPR. The other two refused, fearing for their jobs, but they say that they believe the monitor was malfunctioning. But still, disabling it is against the law. It's official. The first 6 months of 2010 are the hottest January through June on record. That's according to NASA. It's both in terms of atmospheric data and in combined atmospheric and ocean readings. Also, just this week in the Atlantic Ocean, new measurements show sea surface temperatures in the Atlantic Hurricane Basin are the warmest ever recorded for the month of June. And if that weren't enough, Arctic ice experts report that ice extent at the North Pole hit the lowest ever recorded for the month of June.
Oh, you and your facts and figures and demonstrable science.
President Obama called on Congress to pass clean energy legislation to boost clean energy jobs at a groundbreaking for a new electric car battery plant in Holland, Michigan today. It's the ninth battery plant constructed with funds from the Stimulus Recovery Act. Michigan Governor Jennifer Granholm says 62,000 jobs in the battery industry will be created, and she's going to turn the Rust Belt of Michigan into the Green Belt.
That's 62,000 jobs over the next 10 years. Still, this is the right direction.
In the BP oil disaster in the Gulf, operations are at a critical juncture. Notwithstanding all the stops and starts, pressure testing of the new tighter cap was delayed overnight after BP engineers had to repair a leak in the choke line that will be slowly closed off over the next 48 hours to test the integrity of the well. Now, expect this to move slowly and cautiously over the next 2 to 3 days.
So the concern here is if they plug it up too quickly, the pressure could make the whole rest of the well bore explode out laterally. Is that the concern?
Basically, that is. And so even if the well bore is damaged, this will still provide extra containment capability, and they will still rely on those two relief wells to be completed in August.
We walked into this almost completely blind, almost completely unprepared to understand the impact of the use of these dispersants.
On Thursday, a congressional hearing on chemical dispersants used in the BP oil disaster highlighted the federal government's disturbing lack of research and data on its effects. At the Senate Appropriations Subcommittee hearing testimony, EPA Administrator Lisa Jackson admitted that the long-term effects of the dispersants on marine life are unknown. Ken Cook, president of the Environmental Working Group, was much more blunt.
Some industry and government spokespeople are trying to reassure us that this chemical is really no different than some of the chemicals we find in everyday detergents and other consumer products. Unfortunately, we don't have a safety system that assesses those chemicals in those applications either.
Finally, Senate Democrats are threatening to bring climate and clean energy legislation up for debate in the next 2 weeks.
Threatening?
Oh, yes, before Congress adjourns for the August recess. Now, it looks like Senate Democrats will try to make a deal to exempt utilities from any clean air regulations from the EPA in exchange for gaining their support for the bill.
So the utility companies here, the polluters, are going to have their own say, and the deal they're going to make is that the EPA will no longer be able to regulate them in exchange for allowing a cap on emissions?
For a short time, yes.
Brilliant. Read about that and much more at our website, greennews.bradblog.com. We'll let New Orleans rap group Shamar Allen Music play us out. You can watch the whole video at our website, greennews.bradblog.com. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
To those affected in your families, I'm deeply sorry.
Keep your story. Sorry won't clean this field. Save the lives you killed. No, it changed how I feel. So don't say sorry. Think that we don't know. But we know how this goes. It's just damage control. Don't make a sign. Come here, first things first. Tell me how much is this dead pelican worth? How does it feel to have a man's blood on your shirt? Single-handedly put a whole industry out of work. I don't care what boat it is, no, but y'all ain't gonna deceive me.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head on with Bob Kincaid.
Yes, indeedy it is. 9 minutes past the hour on this Front Porch Friday on the Horn. And the lines are open, by the way, if you want to light them up. And a reminder for you. Volume 4 of the People's Mixtape will come your way 7 p.m. tomorrow evening. I have that from DJ Kid A earlier today. Volume 4 of the People's Mixtape, 7 p.m. Eastern Time. It's primetime run. But it will roll throughout the weekend as part of the rerun stream. And you can also, as a reminder, for those of you who haven't quite gotten used to the notion yet, you can hear Rick Smith, the Rick Smith Show, live at noon Eastern Time, Saturdays and Sundays on the Horn, by all means. It's a different phone number, but listen for the phone number, call in, conversate with Rick, and let folks listening to the radio there in Pennsylvania know that the rest of the world knows what a treasure Rick Smith is as well. So we've got the Rick Smith Show live for you Friday and Saturday, and then the initial run of a brand new Volume 4 of the People's Mixtape, 7 p.m. Saturday evening Eastern Daylight Time. You're going to love it. If you were listening last night, you heard Juanita's endorsement of the show. And anything Juanita loves, I think you'll like.
it should be a grand experience. Now, by way of reminder, the rerun stream is going to get a little weird in our absence. There will not be any. There will not be a People's Mixtape a week from Saturday. Okay, tomorrow there will be. A week from tomorrow there won't be because I won't be here to load it in. We're going to be gone, getting ready to come back from Vegas. Okay, all square? Goody. Now, the phone lines are open. You know the number, 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, head on. On your nickel, it's 304-658-3333, and email rolls into Bob Kincaid, B-O-B-K-I-N-C-A-I-D, at gmail.com. Easy, easy. And like I said, if you've never been to the headonradionetwork.com chat room, registration is free and easy, and you should avail yourself of that as well. Now, I'm going to the phones in just a moment, but I don't want you to think that I just spent the last hour running my yapper about something, you know, that I was maybe making it up. They had a press conference in Charleston today. All about young Master Goodwin's chair-warming ceremony to hold the seat for Marse Joe when he gets around to getting himself electorated. And so he answered some questions about global warming and about cap and trade. And Cart Goodwin had the following to say about it. I'm a little reluctant to get into an extensive political discussion on any particular piece of legislation. A lot being said, with regard to cap and trade, I will say this. From what I've seen of the Waxman-Markey bill that passed the House of Representatives and other proposals pending in the Senate, they simply are not right for West Virginia. And I would submit that the legislation being championed by Senator Rockefeller right now that would focus investment on clean coal technology that has never been proven, can't be proven, and will never flippin' work. No, I added that part. Focus investment on clean coal technology and carbon sequestration so that the deadly poisonous carbon gases can someday bubble up under a school or some such and kill every living human in sight. No, he didn't say that either. I did. Back. That would focus on investment on clean coal technology and carbon sequestration recognizes the practical effect of coal on our economy and our energy portfolio. More broadly, let me answer the question this way. I will not support any piece of legislation that threatens any West Virginia job, any West Virginia family, or jeopardizes the long-term economic security of this state. You don't have to live too far from earshot of any radio or newspaper to know how strongly West Virginians feel about that issue, and how important it is to protect our jobs and our economy, and how important it is to make those voices heard in Washington. Wow. At his inaugural press conference, at his introduction to the wide, wide world, Cart Goodwin just lifted his middle finger and gave a big F you to the whole blessed planet. Isn't that charming? Any piece of legislation that threatens any West Virginia job, any West Virginia family? Does that include the families up, Printer Holler there, Cart, buddy? Because, see, they've been threatened a lot by the coal industry. And there's people who are too dead to have jobs. I guess those jobs qualify as threatened because they were poisoned by the coal industry, Cart. Do they count? Nope, sorry, they don't. What he meant was, I will not support any piece of legislation that threatens any West Virginia corporation, any West Virginia coal company, or jeopardizes the long-term economic security of any West Virginia, any international, any national, Russian, Chinese, Indian, what have you, coal company. Now make myself clear. Yeah, I think so. I do indeed. To the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Bob?
Jim.
Good evening. How are you doing?
I'm a little head up, I'm afraid.
I believe it. You've had quite a first hour there. My kudos to you on your dialogue and what you've had to say.
Thank you.
You know, honestly and truly, these men are people who have truly sold their birthright for a mess of pottage.
You know, and they claim to be the ones who are all the time with their noses in the Bible, but they missed that part, didn't they, Jim?
They certainly did, Bob. You know, and going back to A Man for All Seasons, and I don't mean to dwell too much on that movie because a lot of people may not have seen it, but I will never forget the scene in that movie when they were trying to get Sir Thomas More to sign the document, which he would not sign. And they said, "Come on, Thomas, why don't you sign it for fellowship's sake?" And his reply was, "When you are sent to heaven for doing your conscience, and I am sent to hell for not doing mine, will you join me for fellowship's sake?"
I wish I had the audio of that particular scene, Jim, because that nails it. Right onto the, well, right, not to the church door, but, you know, to the governor's mansion door.
I saw that film when I was 21 years old in 1966. And never has any film made such an impression upon me. Because up until that time, I thought I knew the meaning of integrity. But when I saw that presentation done so well by Thomas Schofield, directed by Fred Zinnemann, it literally floored me. And it taught me a great deal of things that my own father had tried to teach me, which I had sort of ignored in the brashness and ignorance of my youth.
It's kind of amazing when the lights go on, isn't it?
It certainly was a turn-on for me. And I'll add something to this. And you're talking about the Moonscape situation with the mountaintop removal. I can remember back when my dad had a farm, a tree farm. And apparently they used to cut pulpwood and stuff for paper. Well, they could do one of two things. They can either partially cut or clear cut. And somehow there was a misunderstanding. And they went in there and they clear cut that place, 60 acres. And when they finished, what had been a beautiful forest was turned into literal moonscape.
A hateful waste.
I couldn't believe it, and my father couldn't believe it either, because somehow or another, someone had deliberately miscarried, and he had not paid attention as much as he should have. But, you know, they went in there and they literally destroyed. So I know the meaning of what you're saying about turning beautiful land and the stewardship of the earth into a horror.
You know, sometimes, Jim, I worry about the sort of rural colloquialisms that I use. I often describe a mountaintop removal site as being a place so desolate that a buzzard flying across has to pack a lunch.
Well, that's exactly what it is, because there's nothing there but just burned out earth. I mean, you know, it's like...
I don't know if people, you know, apart from maybe an imagination of the Sahara Desert, I don't know if folks really get their heads around what it means to have a place, a scarred out place of thousands upon thousands of acres. You know, and as we speak now, there has been enough mountaintop removal in Appalachia to account for the entire square acreage of the entire state of Delaware. And it's been rendered lifeless. And I don't know if maybe folks who live in cities or don't live in around mountains or whatever can imagine the verdant, life-infused, green loveliness with the babbling brooks and the streams and the cool, clear, the cool evening in a dell or a holler. I don't know if they can visualize that. But literally, we're talking about a lifeless place. And anybody who knows what a turkey buzzard is, you know, a buzzard will eat anything.
Exactly.
And to say that a place is so desolated that a buzzard flying across has to pack a lunch is to suggest that that bird would starve. A thing that will eat anything, carrion, dead, half alive, rotten, doesn't matter. To say that such a creature would starve to death on such a place is my passing attempt to try to create a vision in people's minds of the horrible level of lifeless, moonish. I, well, I'm bereft of words, Jim.
Of course it is. I mean, you know, when you see it, I mean, it's unspeakable, unthinkable, and inexpressible. It, you know, that's exactly what it is. I mean, I know exactly what you're saying. And, you know, I'm not a native West Virginian, and I always wondered why the people of this state were, as I told you in an earlier email, xenophobic, because the people who have come into this state and raped it and taken everything from it and then left it and told the people who have lived on these lands for generations to go F themselves because they don't care. They've taken what they wanted, and, you know, you can survive on what we've left. And that's a hell of a way to, for people to treat one another.
And to consider, I mean, if you're going to talk about the coal, the natural resources, to consider the uncountable wealth, Jim, that has been present here, of which we have no manifestation whatsoever save for the bank books of out-of-state, out-of-country, damn near off-planet corporations. It boggles the mind. It boggles the mind.
It does. You know, I just recently viewed Avatar, and that's a very good movie. And there's a message in Avatar, for those who haven't seen it, that relates very well with what we've been discussing tonight. And I urge anyone who can to view that movie.
You know, the tribe Kincaid, Jim, goes to the real live, honest to goodness moving picture show about once every 2 years. And the day after Christmas, on frozen roads, we drove to see Avatar because I wanted to see it on the big screen. You know, the 3D wonders, and it was amazing. And the thing had barely started. You remember the very beginning of the movie, Jim. The first thing you see when those mercenaries are rolling off or coming off of that transport ship and putting their little face shields down and everything, the first thing you see is a giant yellow earth-moving truck.
Exactly.
And Agnes and I both turned to each other and said, holy cow, it's a mountaintop removal vehicle.
You got it, my friend. That's it, really. Absolutely. Well, listen, I'm going to let you go and move on to your next caller, but tonight's been a particularly good show, and keep on.
Well, thank you, Jim. I'll try to make the other half as hopefully scintillating as the first one was. You take care and have a wonderful weekend.
And the same to you, Bob.
Bye now. Jim, calling from not very too far away at all. We go onward. Hey, welcome to the program.
It's your Campbell's Soup correspondent, Bob.
Oh, you, Richard.
You know, I have two cans sitting in front of me. I think what we need to do is have alternatives. You know, it's like, can somebody whip up a recipe for homemade Campbell's tomato soup without the high fructose corn syrup?
Well, you know, it's called making tomato soup.
Right, but I mean, some of us love that taste.
Oh yeah,
you know.
But the thing, you know, the thing that drives me crazy is that you can, you know, just replace high fructose corn syrup with sugar.
You know, that's a good question. I mean, it's like, I know that we don't like high fructose corn syrup, but I can't remember why. And is it the same as just ordinary corn syrup?
Well, no, it's not the same as, you know, that white Karo syrup on the shelf.
Yeah.
That stuff has been with us for literally generations. It was, in fact, my mother always kept a bottle on the shelf or in the fridge. I don't know why it was in the fridge. But she kept a bottle in the fridge, not so much for cooking or anything, although it is the sine qua non of any good pecan pie.
Yes.
She kept it in the fridge in case anybody got a sick stomach.
Yes.
Because a big old whopping tablespoon of that stuff will coat your belly and settle down a sour stomach in like that. But it's not the same as high fructose corn syrup. High fructose corn syrup is an animal of an entirely different variety. And in fact, if you ever get your hands on Michael Pollan's The Omnivore's Dilemma, you will read, in fact, that in attempting to find out how it's made, that he went through layers of security trying to get into the refinery, because, see, they have to do it in a refinery, and they have to frack it and crack it just like hydrocarbons are. He went through layers of security that are most closely associated with the security that resemble nuclear, the security around nuclear power plants. And, I mean, it really is that deep and that intensive. And because of the way it's structured, based upon what I have read, the most pernicious part of high fructose corn syrup, you know, just another way to poison the world for a profit, by the way, you know, this conversation is not that far from the topic with which I began. What it does is, you know, if you eat something sweet, it is metabolized, it goes to your belly, it's broken down by the acids and little creatures that live there, and then it goes into your intestine, and I will rely on Lottie in the chat room for the close-in details of this. But it's, and then it passes as caloric or whatever energy, whatever, into the rest of your body through the small intestine. And it from the small intestine, it travels to centers in your brain, which trigger the hormonal or endocrine responses that tell you that you are full or that you've had enough sweet or, you know, that kind of messaging. But the problem with high fructose corn syrup, Richard, is that it is not metabolized in the intestine. It is metabolized in the liver just like booze.
Okay. Now,
and so consequently, it doesn't trigger those things that tell you you're full, those things that tell you you've had enough.
Okay.
And so you keep consuming it, keep consuming it, keep consuming it, which is really the point.
Are you saying it's addictive?
I don't think you can qualify it as addictive per se, Richard.
Yeah.
But what it is it your body, through its natural processes, does not have a means of telling itself to turn off.
Yeah, I know that very well. I have a problem with it.
And the other problem of it is that it contributes, and I know this because I am hyperlipidemic. I am a triglyceride and cholesterol factory.
Okay.
And what it does is it also contributes, as I understand it via my reading and research, it contributes to your triglyceride problem. Because triglycerides are a different animal from cholesterol per se. Triglycerides are a precursor, I think, again, relying on Lottie. And for instance, you know, a couple of years ago this past May, I had a terrible incident where I went into the hospital and I had gone into acute pancreatitis. And because I was in there and I was in my, I was back in my Viking gone to seed stage, so I had this long beard and long hair, and it's the picture they chose to use. That face is the picture the folks at Talkers Magazine used to choose in noting me as one of the 50 best internet-based broadcasters in the country. But because I look like that, the doctor comes in and he looks at me and says, "You no drinky, you no drinky, no drinky no more." And I said, "But I love apple juice and cranberry juice." "No, no, no. Alcohol. You no drink alcohol no more." And he was treating, you know, I had a pair of short pants on and a button-down shirt. But, you know, I was casual, and he was treating me like one of the boys under the bridge because I had a beard and long hair and pancreatitis. But what it turns out is they had done blood work on me a couple of weeks before, and I had a triglyceride level that made my doctor, it just made the blood run out of his face.
And the reason was, the cause?
Well, I'm a triglyceride factory. But high fructose corn syrup, which I eliminated from my diet immediately, high fructose corn syrup can contribute to triglyceride levels, and triglyceride levels, in turn, can actually cause pancreatitis in somebody who doesn't even drink.
Okay. I see. I'm trying to get my head around something here, which is, let me continue on this. There's a very nice natural food store down the hill from where I live. And as a matter of fact, I don't see how I could live anywhere else without this resource. It's a friendly place. And they sell a lot of things in bins. You know, you can scoop your own stuff. All kinds of nice things, like buckwheat groats, you know.
Oh, yeah. Oh, you know, I love steel-cut oats myself.
Yeah, well, I can
is this the food porn portion of the program?
Not exactly. No, it's a questioning portion for me. Anyway, let me continue. I can walk in there and I can scoop my own fructose out of a jar. And I once did it, in fact. You know, I was looking, I'm diabetic and I was looking for some sort of alternative. And, matter of fact, I'm looking at it right now. It's right here in front of me, $1.14 a pound. From quite a while ago. Because I can't touch this stuff. So, it's like I'm asking myself, well, what's the difference between the fructose that's in fruit, you know, like oranges, and the fructose that's in this jar here, and the fructose that's in high fructose corn syrup?
Well, and again, there's fructose and there's high fructose corn syrup.
Yeah.
And the mere wording of it tells you that they're different animals. For instance, just by another example, once upon a time I brewed my own beer. I wish I still had time and space to do it.
Right.
Because really, you know, beer at 15 cents a bottle tastes a lot better than the beer at $1.25 a bottle.
Oh, undoubtedly.
And you get the joy of having made it yourself.
Yes.
But anyway, when you have made your beer and you have pitched the yeast and you have set it aside in a room at about 70 degrees Fahrenheit and you've got the little airlock bubbler on the top of it, it's tick, 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 it's cute as hell. After a while, the airlock will quit bubbling, and everything will settle down, and the yeast will have done all that the yeast can do. It will have become entirely attenuated.
Yes.
Okay, so at that point in time, you've got a 5-gallon bucket of incredibly flat green beer. Not green like St. Patrick's Day. Green as in not old enough to drink. So then you got to bottle the stuff. And if you want to, you know, if you want that when you open the beer bottle, you've got to prime it. And the way you prime it, I know this is a long story, Richard, I'm sorry.
That's okay.
But the way you prime it is you buy something from your local brewing supply called corn sugar, which is, I believe, in essence, the same thing you're talking about, fructose. It's very white, very powdery.
Yep.
Yeah. And
yeah, it's kind of clumps when it absorbs the slightest bit of moisture.
And you do a boiling, you know, you have to do boiling water. And you put a wee amount of your corn sugar into the boiling water, let it completely dissolve, put that in the bottom of your bottling bucket, and then you siphon in your beer that you're getting ready to bottle. And because the yeast hasn't worked on it, and there's not enough there for the yeast to really work with, when you bottle your beer and cap it down tight, if you haven't used too much, it will, as it ages in your cellar or wherever you're keeping it, it will naturally carbonate the beer. And that is fructose. That's not high fructose corn syrup, because to get high fructose corn syrup, to take this thing full 360 degrees, to get high fructose corn syrup, you have to literally torment the corn and put it through a fracking process that is not much chemically different from what you do to get gasoline out of crude oil.
Okay, so it sounds to me like this term high fructose corn syrup puts something in that corn syrup that is not quite the same as this fructose that I'm looking at right here. Mike.
No, it's not the same animal at all.
Yeah, okay. So there's fructose and there's fructose.
No, don't even look at it that way, Richard. There's fructose and there's high fructose corn syrup, HFCS. Wildly different animal. And the funny thing is that, as I think we talked about before, companies are getting away from the stuff. I love it's got a ton of sugar in it, but I just love the taste of it. Ruby red grapefruit from Ocean Spray.
Oh yeah.
Just love that over ice. It's wonderful. But it's a cocktail. It's not all juice, but I love the taste. But lo and behold, of all the people out there, you learn from this that these companies actually do pay attention to a certain degree to what's going on. You're probably not a big sport fan.
No.
But back in the late 60s, a guy at the University of Florida was answering a question from the University of Florida football coach, because when you go to do football practice in Florida, you're talking about practicing football in intensely uncomfortable, high humidity, high heat situations in which your players will dehydrate at a hard look. And back in the bad old days of Bear Bryant and so forth, well, son, go over there and take you a couple of them salt tablets and drink you some water. You'll be all right. And, you know, he goes over there, takes the salt tablets, drinks a bunch of water, and vomits his guts up. Well, trying to answer this question, the scientist at the University of Florida built an electrolytic solution that would also replace sugars, and he put a little bit of lemon-lime flavor in it. And since it was being done for the Florida Gators, they called it Gatorade. They called it Gatorade.
Yeah.
And Gatorade, eventually it came in a powder form, and it just took off in the athletic community because it really, really did what it said it did. And then a few years back, whoever it is that makes the stuff, I've got a jug of it here, let me look. The Gatorade Company, Chicago, I think Del Monte used to make it or something. Anyway, whoever makes the stuff, a few years back thought, you know what? We can increase the profit margin by 0.000001%, which will aggregate into a $50 million a year bonus for our CEO if we replace the sugar in Gatorade with high fructose corn syrup. And they did. There's only one problem. It didn't work the same way as Gatorade did. Because, again, the sugar is metabolized differently from the high fructose corn syrup and in a different part of the body.
Well, I hate to use jargon here in this
case. Well, let me just finish real quick, because there's a denouement to this thing that is worth a little bit of a hallelujah. It used to be, and you know how it is with food labeling, right, Richard?
I hope so.
The food labeling laws say that which is most prevalent in the product must come first.
Yeah.
And on downward by prevalence within the product.
By weight.
I'm not sure if it's by weight or by volume.
Yeah.
But anyway, lo and behold, the recipe, the printed ingredients label of Gatorade used to read water, high fructose corn syrup, citric acid, natural flavor, salt, sodium citrate, monopotassium phosphate, gum arabic, glycerol, ester of rosin, yellow 5. Lo and behold, because this stuff is held out to the public as being the panacea for hot and sweaty athletes, and you got Michael Jordan, and when he's not making dirty text messages to his girlfriend Tiger Woods and everybody else, athletes. Lo and behold, let me share with you now the Gatorade ingredient label.
Go ahead.
Water, sucrose, dextrose, citric acid, natural flavor, salt, sodium citrate, monopotassium phosphate, gum arabic, glycerol, ester of rosin, yellow 5. No high fructose corn syrup.
Oh.
The stuff is on the way out. The only problem is it's on the way out for relatively expensive label items like, because the stuff ain't cheap in the grocery store, Ocean Spray's Ruby Red Grapefruit Cocktail, Gatorade. But it's not on the way out for stuff that poor people eat. It is all over the place. And it's in stuff where you don't even see high fructose corn syrup, because there are solid forms of it that are separate compounds that are still made with HFCS.
Now listen to this one. I'm looking right now at a loaf of Kirkland All Natural Multi-Grain 100% Whole Grain Bread. And of course, Kirkland is Costco's brand. And this, bread's got all kinds of great stuff in it.
Wood shavings.
Not yet.
No, you ain't bought a loaf of Wonder Bread in a while.
No, I haven't.
That's why it smells like freshly sharpened pencils.
Yeah. Well, here it's got, whole wheat flour, whole grain mix, and, all kinds of good stuff in it. And way down here, it's got cultured corn syrup solids.
There you go.
There's a new one.
Well, let me drop another one on you. You know how we've all seen the television, well, maybe not the folks without televisions, but the television commercials where Jared shows the pictures of how Jared used to be a really chubby guy, and now Jared's the spokesman for Subway, and he holds out his pants, and you could put two Jareds in, two of the modern Jareds in Jared's old pants, and he got that way by eating Subway sandwiches. And we think, you know what, instead of taking the kids to McDonald's, even though they're screaming and howling, we'll take them to Subway and get them a nice, healthy sub with nice, healthy, fresh meats on it. And Mommy and Daddy feel better about it. Or, even if the kids aren't involved, I'm going to go get a 6-inch turkey sub. And you know what? That'll be better for me. Guess what, Richard?
What?
that wonderful smelling bread that the whole store smells like when you walk into Subway?
Yeah.
Well, that arrives on trucks frozen harder than the bricks out of which the building is made. So they've got proofing ovens where they put it in, and it thaws gently, and then raises, and then they bake it, and then they make your sub out of it.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. That bread, and particularly, you know, you've got a choice of breads at Subway. You can have the white bread. Ooh, white devil poison refined flour. Ooh, bad white bread. Or then you've got their golden wheat, whole wheat, 9 grains that you can choose from. And, you know, I know a lot of people who are trying to live healthy lifestyles, and if they're in Subway, they go for the whole wheat. Oh, I'll have the whole wheat. I don't want that demon white bread.
It's just paint, right?
Well, chemically speaking, yes. Because here's the, you know, you know, we paid our 25 cents to see this way to the egress, and here's the outside of the fence. Subway's whole grain, 9 grain, whole wheat, golden wheat bread, it has 9 grains in it. And you can count them individually by weight. All 9 of them. Because there is a fraction equaling about 1 grain of rye, 1 grain of oats, 1 grain of barley, you get the idea.
Yeah, I do, yeah.
And the rest of it is plain old-fashioned, look at it, devil white flour, processed food. But we're not done. This is a Ginsu commercial, Richard. the vast amount of starch, bulk, flour in whole grain, 9 grain goodness, whole wheat, Subway bread is white flour. The sweetness in the bread comes from, you say it, don't make me,
high fructose corn syrup.
Bingo! Toaster for Richard.
Well,
wait.
Doesn't surprise.
Told you it was against the commercial. Here's the last part. Here's the kicker. Here's the part where we walk away vomiting. That lovely golden brown color in the whole grain, 9 grain, good for you, wheat bread?
Paint.
Chemical paint. In particular, it is something called ammonium sulfate.
Oh, God.
which you can find in any given bag of lawn fertilizer.
And the person behind the counter says, would you like wheat bread, right?
Right. Wheat or white?
Wheat or white. I pay attention to, little chicaneries in the food business, and they never stop. I mean,
but the thing is, and here's the fun part about the ammonium sulfate. Yeah. We don't even know if it's fit for human consumption. It's just like Pizza Hut. I have not, since I read this story and talked about it 2 or 3 years ago on the program, I have not set foot in a Pizza Hut. Because I read that, those lovely bags of pre-shredded mozzarella cheese that goes on the pizzas?
Yeah, it's all concocted, isn't it?
No, it's actually mozzarella cheese, but once they've shredded it, they spray it with silicone.
And what's the purpose of that?
Well, it keeps it fresh.
Oh, boy.
You know, so I don't know. Does the bathroom need regrouting? Just go spit in the cracks. Eat yourself a Pizza Hut pizza and...
Yeah.
Spit in the cracks.
Well, I'm looking at all these food events that happen, these changes in the industry. Like, you know, I think our biggest bread baking company, you know, makes packaged breads, is a Mexican outfit called Bimbo right now. And they have just an incredible number of brands of packaged baked goods that they sell all over the country. Here, Oro Wheat is, I don't know if you got that back east.
No.
Yeah. Entenmann's.
Entenmann's we got.
Yeah, that's probably a Bimbo item, because that became part of Oro Wheat. And, my really big event is when they changed the tuna fish. I don't know if anybody's looking. Tuna fish is awesome. I mean... You go buy a can of white tuna, and my God, look at the chemicals in there.
Yeah,
and I'm just encouraging people to, you know,
read the labels,
because it's like a chemistry soup of stuff. And I mean, I'm able to buy really good quality canned tuna fish, still in 6-ounce cans, but what happened was, all of a sudden, there was like all the tuna fish in 6 ounce cans was being closed out at great prices. And I was wondering, you know, like, what's going on? All the brands didn't seem to matter. Like a fire sale on tuna fish. And I figured something's up. And sure enough, all of a sudden, the shelves were now stocked with 5 ounce cans of tuna. And when I was a kid, that was an 8 ounce can. That was a half a pound of tuna.
Well, it's like, you know, I remember when coffee came in 1 pound bags. And now coffee comes in 12-ounce bags for the same price that you used to pay for a pound.
Yeah, right.
Or, you know, when I buy ice cream at the store, I buy Breyers vanilla and Breyers chocolate and Breyers strawberry because the ingredient says milk, cream, sugar, shut up.
Yeah, I noticed that.
No high fructose corn syrup, no guar gum, no gum arabic, no locust bean gum.
And
I don't even know what a guar is, but I don't want to eat one.
Something safe. I think it's something that's safe.
Oh, I'm sure the industry will tell you that it is.
You know, something out of a cactus or something like that. But we don't know when we read an ingredients list, you know, what's what with those ingredients. I mean, in ice cream, it's usually a big chemistry set. I don't know. I mean, it's like this this tuna fish thing had to be collusion throughout the industry. I mean, it all happened at once. You see my point?
Yeah.
What's another? Conspiracy. That's a better word. And it's like this.
It's not only that. Richard, that's not only a better word. That is the word. You see,
okay.
you got to. There's a long chain, a long train here. Where that goes from farm subsidies to massive agribusiness to places like Monsanto to your dinner table.
Right.
You know, I will not buy a can of Dinty Moore beef stew.
Oh, God, that...
because I found out once upon a time, and talked about it on this show, that they use, you know, you can't, you know, if a cow is standing there, you know, up to its knees in its own feces. Oh, good, dinner table talk. And collapses because it has finally been poisoned to death by the antibiotics and the hormones and the horrible treatment, and it's been fed on corn. Again, we're back to corn again.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Cattle are, is the word I'm looking for, ungulates? They're grass eaters. They're made to eat grass. They're not made to eat corn.
Right.
And when you feed a cow corn, you send its multiple stomachs into absolute paroxysms of misery. So you have to give it lots of drugs to make its tummy feel better. And you have to give it hormones.
That's awful.
And after doing that, if you can't rush it into the slaughterhouse fast enough, the cow will get sick of that or some other disease and literally drop dead standing knee-deep in its own doo-doo. And they are and those cattle are called downer cattle. Oh, I'm going to end it all. You know, it's like a tropical depression. It's so hot. No, they're called downer cattle. And what they do is they come along with the forklift and they pick up the downer cow corpse and they take it over to the processing place where the desperately underpaid Latino workers mostly. Like up at Agriprocessors in Postville, Iowa, that was run by Shalom Rubishkin, as he parsed out clean kosher beef.
Yeah,
you know, to a credulous Jewish Orthodox population. Yeah, he went to prison for a long time. Talked about it on the show. They pick it up with a forklift and they take it over and they hose down the caca off of it as best they can and then they cape it because, you know, that cape's gonna turn into leather and that leather's gonna be in your shoes or something because it'll be shipped to China where some dude or some child chained to a sewing machine making 3 cents a day will make you a pair of Nikes that you can then proudly run up and down the streets in, not you personally, but, you know, we as consumers. But then they take the stripped off cow and you can't cut him, you can't cut said cow into ribeyes and New York strips because it didn't, because it died of more or less unnatural causes. Okay? But, and here's the, you know, here's the kicker. What you can do is you can chunk it up, the remorselessly, and you can send those chopped up beef chunks off to a meat processing plant that makes, oh, I don't know, Dinty Moore beef stew or Spam or Chef Boyardee or yeah. Campbell's, anything where it's going to be have the hell cooked out of it before it ever reaches the consumer. And they chop it up in tiny little chunks, and the next thing you know, you're putting a downer cow in your grocery cart, and it says vegetable beef soup or Dinty Moore beef stew or Chef Boyardee or Armor Star chili with beans.
Well, Bob, where do you do your shopping?
Kroger, mostly.
And where's your nearest Kroger?
15 miles away.
In what city?
Oak Hill, West Virginia.
Okay. I just was wondering. I don't know what you guys have.
And Agnes has gotten to the point, bless her heart, where she won't go to the store with me. Because it won't go in my basket until I've read the label. It will
my
not.
My mother taught me how to be a good shopper.
Oh, yeah, and don't forget the downer cattle, chili, and pizza, you know, pepperoni, stuff like that. That goes into children's school lunch programs. You know, and then this shows you the depth of sickness of a Rush Limbaugh, because he hates poor people so much that he doesn't even want them eating school lunches, and he doesn't want money going into the school lunch program, and the school lunch program is so damn poor that it has to buy from processors who send them food made with downer cows.
Well, we know this about Limbaugh. I mean, I'm you know, the Limbaughs, the Hannitys, all those people, they propagandized to their...
Oh, by the way, Karl Rove said Hannity should run for president and he'd be his campaign manager.
Well, it doesn't surprise me. I think there's more of us than there are.
Yeah, see, I'm just sitting here working for ways to further put people off their dinner.
Well, let's change the topic to mountaintop removal then.
That ain't going
to
help.
Well, you know, you just mentioned something about people outside of your region, their ability to understand the situation that you all face, and I have to say, you know, it's a hard change of thought, and so I think that we need to do some word magic about this, and let's call it mountain demolition, you know.
Well, you know, I suggested for a long time, and it still has an alliterative quality, what we have to talk about is mountain range removal.
Well, the word removal is no good. It's like, you know, I go to a barber and he says, would you like a little bit more off the top, you know?
Right, yeah, no. It's,
take the mountain and once a little bit more off the top.
See, what I once argued, and our good friend Jeff Biggers agreed with me, is that we need to stop talking about mountaintop removal at all. We need to start talking about mountain removal.
Yes, I agree.
Because whatever it is that's left over when they're done, it is damn sure not a mountain.
Yeah. And you are facing such incredible corruption on the state level. I mean, it's really mind-boggling.
Oh, if we had a real government, most of these people would be in jail.
Right. And, it, you know, looking at the extractive, I'm going to call it the extractive industry.
There you go.
As a whole, you know, I mean, we got them in the lumber business here in California.
Oh, without doubt.
And, Jesus, I forget, Pacific Lumber, I think, is the name of the outfit. It's kind of hard to believe the size and scale of these outfits. And
lo and behold, and I know you're not a dedicated tube watcher, nor am I, but when I'm going back and forth between sporting events, I see things on other channels. And do you know what? The Discovery Channel that has this incredibly successful show about watching men put their lives at risk to trap king crabs in impossibly difficult situations so that somebody in... you know, somebody in East Aboga, Alabama can sit down at the Red Lobster and have crabs. It's incredibly popular, so they've got more more like it. That thing's called Deadliest Catch. But they got another one now about loggers who are going in and just clear-cutting the shit out of an entire region.
Where is this?
I'm not sure. It's somewhere in the far north of Canada, I think.
Yeah.
And I'm sitting I sit there and I watch this stuff, Richard, and I go, really? We're that bored? We want to watch these guys rape and pillage and plunder a region, and we somehow get off on it, and they can sell Cheerios with it? Really?
Who is this? The Discovery Channel?
Yeah.
I have to tell you, I never bought a converter for my TV. I don't get over-the-air television anymore. I watch an awful lot of stuff.
You are free. You are free.
Well, I go to the library. As a matter of fact, I assume a lot of people can do this now. I order videos online, and they come to me from elsewhere in the county, whatever I want to see. The whole catalog is online.
Oh, you mean in civilization?
Well, here, you know, we have a county library system with a lot of libraries, so, and I'm just looking here at this wonderful movie, a German film called The Lives of Others. It's about the Stasi.
Ooh, they were creepy.
Yeah, well, it's about a playwright who the Stasi is watching, and his life, and the guy who's watching him. Wonderful piece called The Lives of Others. And I'm getting off on Rumpole of the Bailey.
Oh, well, that's, yeah, and God, Blackadder, and, yeah.
Yeah. Just great stuff. If there's any, and I've never had a cable subscription, I won't do it. You know, I'm not going to enrich those bastards.
I understand that completely.
You know, and I'm not going to put a thing on the roof. Oh, well, for one thing, I don't...
Well, you know, John Prine said it best. Throw out your TV.
Yeah, but then...
Eat a lot of peaches.
I couldn't watch the videos. And by the way, I've seen one movie from Iraq. And I forgot the name of it right now. Saddam was in power at the time. And it's all about the people who live in the marshes between the Tigris and the Euphrates.
Oh, yeah, those are the people, Richard, that after the end of Bush War I, we said, rise up against your oppressor, rise up against Saddam. And they took us at our words and said, okay, we do that. And then we said, rise up, you're on your own. Goodbye. And Saddam
people?
Slaughtered them. Yeah, oh, yeah, and completely dispossessed them, displaced them, right.
Oh, my God. I mean, you know, it was like you're watching Tom Sawyer, man. I mean, it was like out of, out of Huckleberry Finn.
Yeah. Hey, Richard, we have managed to go to so many different places with so much of this conversation that we now have every line I've got lit up.
Good. I will get off the phone.
So I will roll on. Thank you very kindly, Richard, and have
okay.
a wonderful weekend.
You too.
All right, and bye now. Richard calling from California. Any conversation with Richard is bound to be aesthetic and esoteric. And damn, that's fun. Let's see what I got going on here. Hey, welcome to the program.
Bob.
Sandra.
Hey, right. So I'm still tripping on this, I really can't change subjects, on this unemployment extension thing that's not happening.
Sorry, no.
I know, but the latest now is, Reed is waiting for the replacement for Byrd.
Yeah.
That would somehow they be able to generate the 60. But see, once again, I guess I sort of...
How are they going to make 60 out of 59?
No, but I guess I sort of left the world of political science to this nether world of 60 supermajority when I thought the houses were majority... rules.
The Senate of the United States is ruled by the minority.
Yeah, but it's just, you know, this is all just becoming really sickening, and the need to pay for it, like offsets, I mean, I don't know if we discussed this, but that is what completely undermines what it was about. You know, there is no offset for what this is. This is a stimulative type of expenditure. And they're just trying to contort it, and I guess they're succeeding in trying to convince people that, oh, no, you know, we have to pay as you go for this, when it's never happened in the history of the entitlement, the benefit before.
You know what? You remind me of something. If you don't mind me doing this on your dime, I want to share an email that came in earlier today. Our buddy Tosh wrote in, because this is exactly what you're talking about. And it also does dovetails with something you said last night, Sandra, about, you know, getting a little tired of, you know, it ain't all Obama's fault. Tosh writes in and he said he just read a comment over at Alternet that says polling data suggests the GOP won't be making the gains they've been expecting. He said it was really cool to see. Folks, we're getting crushed on messaging, but there's still hope. He says, here goes my take on the situation. The GOP is getting away with calling the repairs to their misdeeds the Obama agenda. It's not just Barack Obama's agenda. It is and must be ours. And he's got some bullet points here, Sandra, and he says, is getting out of Iraq just Obama's agenda? No. Is getting jobs for the eight months who lost them due to Bush-Cheney's fallout just Obama's agenda? No. Is getting fair pay for women just Obama's agenda? Not likely. Is getting safe, affordable health care just Obama's agenda? No. Is building a green economy just Obama's agenda? No. Is re-regulating the financial sector just Obama's agenda? No, 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 no. Is reestablishing our credibility with the world just Obama's agenda? No. Is saving the mountains of Appalachia just Obama's agenda? No. He's from Chicago. We really need him to come here and see what's going on. He says, are tax cuts for the bottom 90% income earners just Obama's agenda? No, he'll never be one again. And he says, while his legacy will depend on whether he can do what is needed, the agenda is really what we need to see happen. And he says, therefore, it's not just Barack Obama's agenda. And Tosh continues, but he says, you know, we can do this. He says, under the New Deal, the most beloved and lasting achievements occurred. Warner Act, Social Security Act, and so forth. They all happened after the 1934 elections effectively eliminated Republican opposition. He says, I don't know who plays the role of Huey Long this time, but maybe this time it's all of us. With today's increasingly diffuse media, we have the chance, if only we take it. And then finally, and I think this ties in most closely to what you're saying, Sandra, he says, the disappointment so widely seen in the polls does not mean most people want more Republicanism. Issue polls suggest that most Americans want the government to take a positive role in our economy. Like 2008, the Congress didn't have terrible poll numbers because they weren't Republican enough. It's time, Tosh says, to focus and build the country back into the powerhouse that even the teabaggers claim to want. Of course, it was a period when liberal economic policies ruled and tax rates and regulation were at their highest. I'm talking about the 1950s, by the way, he says. And then finally, closing out, Tosh says, the GOP keeps howling about how the stimulus didn't work. But every time I see economists talking about the stimulus, both here and other places, they're worried that it's ending. That doesn't sound like the hallmark of a failed program. And that's exactly, you know, that's exactly the thing with, you know, with unemployment. You know, these repiglic and asses seem to think that everybody's going to go out and stash it in their savings account, when what, you know, unemployed people need to do is pay their damn mortgages, make the car payment, get the set of tires they need, and keep the lights on.
Well, yeah, I mean, no, it's just this absurd sort of misplacement of what deficit spending by a national government is all about. I.e., here in California, this dumbass is trying his best to make the state workers only get paid minimum wage, right? Now, obviously what that's going to do is decimate the multiplying effect of people spending their money, paying their bills. I mean, it is so absurd. It's like, wait a minute. You're going to cure the economic situation by demeaning demand even more? You know, the whole idea is so ass backwards. And they act like the government is the same as the household. It's not, Bob.
No.
You know what I'm saying? It's the last place to stimulate demand, since this is some sort of demand economy, unfortunately. Supply side economics, the reason why it's so shitty is because it just rewards supply. And we see what that's gotten us, right?
Yeah, that didn't work out real well.
And what you just read is, yeah, it's spot on, because no matter how much the Republicans yell, most people I talk to, they don't want them back. See, that's the That's the sticky.
No, they want our side to be acting like a party in power.
No, but that's the problem, and they're not. And I like that whole thing about maybe we have to take the role of Long, because that's exactly what happened with Roosevelt. He was so freaked out by something even more further away from what he wanted that it pushed him in the right direction. And, you know, I don't know if the base, because the Obama doesn't really have a base. I think it's more of a Madison Avenue. I'm sorry. The more I look at the whole Obama phenomena, the more it's more branding than stuff.
Whenever the right wing starts talking about Obama's base, I'm pretty sure they're talking about something that doesn't exist. And that's just based on empirical evidence of prior conduct.
Yeah, no, but it's not a real base because, I mean, the only sort of movement that I saw from what I studied in the New Deal period, it was the fear of total revolution. And that's what FDR was looking at. He was literally saving capitalism. Can we agree on that?
Absolutely. Because, and that's why I keep saying, Sandra, that what Joe Manchin just did with his little lapdog appointment to the United States Senate. You know what? Honest to God, what 36-year-old out there should be seated in the United States Senate? You know, please, for Christ's sakes. But what he's done and what he's already said about cap and trade and stuff like that, he doesn't need to hear from West Virginians. He needs to hear from people in Montana and California and Oregon and Washington and Florida and so forth, saying, "Listen, you little seat warmer. We're not going to let you stand in the way of the future, because all that babble about what's good for West Virginia, well, you know what? A member of the United States Senate is not there solely to represent his state's interests.
Well, especially in these days when the federal government is so oversized, you know, that's just nonsense. You know, we're not in a devolution period.
Right, and that's the point. You know, his position on climate bills and clean coal and carbon sequestration and all that happy horse shit, his position on that is based on talking points from the coal industry. And he does not have the right, as a United States senator, and no United States senator has the right, to screw the entire country for what he perceives to be the well-being of his state. I mean, you know, we've got a little history on this, don't we, Sandra? I mean, didn't South Carolina say ending slavery would be bad for South Carolina, and therefore let's get 600,000 people killed?
Why? No. I miss what I'm saying about the sort of folly of that sort of reasoning. And it doesn't really make any sense because slavery in its day, like the climate calamity that's going on, has to be addressed collectively. I mean, it's so schizophrenic at the moment, but I do think some of the poll numbers are encouraging, especially people saying, we don't give a F about deficit. We hurting out here. Do something using the power of government now.
Plug the leak. I mean, you know, cap the well is not just a concept relating only to the BP disaster.
No, it's across the board, but it's interesting how oftentimes the American public sometimes, we can say, is ahead of the curve, and the horrible media, which we have, I think, is working against itself now because, like that emailer said, you know, there is sort of niche-type information out there now. So people can come at it differently. And I think that the GOP could be overestimating their potency for the fall. I mean, who knows, you know, because I am a bit weary, but
I think you're right, Sandra, and I think there are those who recognize it, even on the other side. I don't know if you've seen the recent comments from this guy who got ousted in South Carolina, a member of the House of some longstanding from the Republican Party. I think his name is Bob Inglis.
For the one who said, keep it secret?
I'm sorry, I lost you there?
He said, keep it secret?
Is your
agenda secret?
Well, no. He said the fact of the matter is our party is playing to its base, and he said that is always bad for the entire country.
Right. Oh, okay. So it was actually something reasonable.
Yeah, he said the Republican Party is poisoning itself.
Well, and the thing is that, you know, like I'm saying, you know, we always sort of look at the mainstream media and like, oh my God, it's a different planet. I'm beginning to think that, you know, that view about the mainstream media is a lot more widespread than I believe, because the poll numbers are really interesting at the moment. It really isn't playing out the way 94 did. I don't believe that, because I think shit is so serious, and people, their memory is not that short.
Well, and you know what? There's a big difference between 94 and 2010 in another regard as well, Sandra, and that is, as much as I loathe, detest, and despise the man, Newt Gingrich had talents that John Boehner will never even dream of.
For sure. But also, though, I just think the situation, I mean, anybody with eyes can figure out that, oh, wait a minute, is it really good for the country to have, you know, hundreds of thousands of people every week facing destitution? You see what I'm saying? That's not, you don't have to be left-right. You can just look at that and see that, oh, wow, that's maybe not a good thing for our well-being, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
So I think that you know, I mean, I don't know. I'm just hoping that they really are shooting themselves in the foot. But see, my only lingering is I just don't trust the Democratic leadership, starting with Obama, because he seems to be so captured by this, I got to placate anybody but the progressives, that he's going to leave us depressed and asleep. They're not going to turn out. And that would be a problem.
It would be a terrible problem, and you know, the enduring question is, and I have no answer for it. How can you look at these numbers and be a Democrat member of the United States Senate, or a Democratic member of the House, or Barack Obama, and not realize that, you know, there are people out there who are wrapping the rags around the torches and getting out and polishing the pitchforks who aren't teabaggers?
Well, that's the thing, and also, but see, it's a worry, because at the same time, you look at that article about them, you know, wanting to deal with that list from business, and, you know, business needs to be freed, you know, and they're actually sort of considering it, and it's just sort of like, wow. So, you know, that's deflating, the corporatist aspect of it. So, and I do think that Obama and his crew would continue being corporatist unless, you know, the message from the people is pretty strong. But I think if they keep starving us, now Americans aren't just going to roll around. I mean, I do think that, but it's just how it's going to be directed.
I'm sorry to be the cynic that I am, Sandra, but I boil it down to this. When this gets bad enough that people's cable starts getting cut off, because they'll go, America, I am convinced, will go hungry before they'll miss the cable bill.
Yeah, well, yeah, I mean, as silly as that sounds, I do think that the infantilization of it, you really could be right about that.
And when the cable starts getting cut off, and you know, maybe one of the things you do is you watch the stock numbers for things like Comcast, and some of the other big ones. When the cable starts getting turned off and people start dealing with reality that doesn't have a babbling head, coming at you in electrons through an LCD screen or whatever, when that happens, then they're going to start getting nasty.
Yeah, no, I mean, but the thing is, I don't know. You know, I'm really hesitant. I don't know. It's another thing that I saw that was quite remarkable is Alan Greenspan saying you need to let them damn taxes lapse. Did you see that?
Yes, I did. And I watched the video and stuff, and I was kind of waiting for the lightning bolt to strike.
No. See, when those sort of elites are in that mode, you know, and Bernanke, he's also freaking out because the Fed, the role of the Fed is, you know, with their independence and all that BS, is to allow them to move quickly. That is a whole bullshit they give you about the Federal Reserve, is that it's not hamstrung politically so it can move quickly. Well, he just came out and said, I don't have nothing to move. He's done, you know what I'm saying? So that's scary. And he's saying that, you know, we can't stop spending too. So there's a lot of different, quarters that are at odds here, and they need to get their act together because double dip, you know, and all that bullshit.
Yeah. Well, and with, you know, I'm sorry, you know, I respond perhaps childishly and certainly viscerally, Sandra. When I saw the Greenspan thing, I really was sickened.
Oh, no, it's foul.
I mean, I think of him, you know, and he's all gnarly and wrinkly and all shriveled up. But I think of him sitting, and you know, this is the truth. This is not, you know, Bob's wild-eyed imagery. This really happened. I think about him sitting on a carpeted floor at the feet of Ayn Rand and looking up at her lovingly and adoringly and almost worshipfully. And I look at all that it wrought. And, it's really mean, and it shows what a poor spirit I just want him to die.
Well, no, I know he should be put up against the wall. That's the thing. When I heard that, I thought, you know, you're not dead yet. It's just, you know what I mean? I'm just thinking, you need to shut the hell up. I couldn't even believe the whole exercise. His whole sort of act is so over the top now. He's trying to climb out of the hole that he created. It's just stunning, but see, at the same time, you have Volcker, who is the destroyer of unions. I'm not a fan. But all these people now are viewed as practically left. So you know we're in trouble, right?
Yeah.
And you have the sort of the cat commission, the cat food commission, you know, they're reigning supreme. And it's just like, you know, are they really going to vote to cut Social Security? I mean, I'm just sort of...
When did that stop being a third rail? When did the statement of Dwight Eisenhower during his presidency to a cousin or whatever that any political party that ever tried to cut Social Security would cease being a national party within a matter of years? When did that stop being viable conventional wisdom, Sandra?
Oh, I know, but the thing is, though, you still have numbers. 80% of the population is like, don't bother with Social Security. In fact, a huge percentage are like, you know, raise the damn cap on the income, on the payroll. Have you noticed? I mean, I saw that, too, and I thought, you know, wow. You know, it's sort of like nothing like economic destitution to wise people up. That's all I got to say.
But that's a story that has played out time and again over humanity's history, isn't it? You know, if you look at what boring ancient Rome moment. Look at the hoops that the Roman Republic jumped through, giving Gnaeus Pompeius massive overarching proconsular powers to root out the pirates, and it was all because the grain shipments coming from Sicily to the Italian peninsula were being raided by pirates, and they were about to have rioting in the streets.
Oh, yeah, well, no, I mean, the Romans were experts at, you know, releasing the valve in their society. I mean, it was nonstop. You know, from what they did to sort of manage the people. They had no problems giving people bread and food and grain and whatever else they needed to keep shit on the DL. And we don't seem to even have that capability, which, like they
said... No, we're in let-them-eat-cake land. We really, really are.
No, and it's sort of... the whole thing is quite ugly. And like I said, I'm sort of moving away from the Obama bashing just... out of a sense of just exasperation. I just don't really understand how he's operating because he's not even making good political moves with this sort of being wedded to this deficit.
Well, did you see this business about Geithner and you know that there's some talk out there about this Consumer Financial Bureau and the natural and logical person to nominate to run it is Elizabeth Warren, right?
And that in itself tells me that...
And Timothy Geithner has come out in full-throated vocal opposition to her.
Well, remember he was the head of the New York Fed for a decade before the crash. So that tells me all I need to know. And not only that, Elizabeth Warren is, you know, she is okay, but she's also representing, you know, the coordinating classes, the petty bourgeoisie.
Oh, absolutely. And that's my whole point, that Timothy Geithner would get his maiden forms in a bunch over a member of his own class?
Right, and see what I'm saying? And it's sort of like he is so captured by the oligarchs. And I think we now can talk in these terms, Bob. I don't think we need to feel weird about, you know, kleptocracy or...
No, it's here. We've got the tickets and we're in the damn seats.
Right, so I think, I mean, that's how I've been talking, you know, at the risk of explaining what those words mean to people. I'm done. They need to understand this is well beyond the beyond.
And you know what? I'm sorry. I hate to keep rolling back to this, but in John Kaminsky's lectures last week down at Concord University, he encouraged everybody interested in that time period to purchase. He says, you know, $15 a copy on eBay or Amazon or whatever. Because there's one out there. He said, purchase a copy. He said, if you want to understand the real meaning of the words that those guys used. He said, go and purchase an 1806 copy of Noah Webster's dictionary, because the definitions are very different, and they represent the actual meaning of the words back then. Now, having said that, let me flash back forward to what you're saying, Sandra, and suggest that, you know what, the day, what you just said, the day of us explaining kleptocrat or oligarchy or autocracy or any of these funny-sounding words that they never use on American Idol, those days are over. And what it's time to have happen is once, going back to my theme, once the cable gets cut off, take out the damn dictionary and start reading some of these words and learning what they mean down in the center of your belly.
Yeah, well, no, because it's like, you know, oftentimes, you know, you could use the word polity instead of democracy, you know, which is sort of the good side of democracy. I mean, the language is important, but, you know, we're dealing with some really heavy demographics now, some changes in this country, you know, all defined by the wealth distribution that's gone on. But people, if they seriously still think that this is a sort of democracy where if you work hard, you can get ahead, that is a joke, and I'm so over it.
I got in trouble at that seminar for using the word myth in a certain context. And this is that too. That whole up by your own bootstraps Horatio Alger BS is mythology. He was a pedophile among other things.
No feeling about him. That bitch never got anywhere until he started writing stories about that myth. That's what's so funny about him.
Yeah, and really regurgitating, because, you know, he was taken under the wing of a wealthy man.
Well, that's what I'm saying. It's just sort of, I know he's a joke, please, but I didn't know he was some sort of...
Yeah, he liked to pick up the little boy street urchins and go and help them become civilized,
Well... Yeah, but anyway, you know, once again, I'm also like, you know, what's his name, Steinbrenner, who just died?
Yeah.
Yet another billionaire who's dead during the time when there's no estate tax, you know?
And what does the right wing say? You know, they're cheering that. Well, at least his heirs won't have to worry.
And it's just kind of like, are you kidding me? And the lack of understanding on why the estate tax was there. I mean, there's a good damn reason for it. And these dumb...
Right, because you're trying... You know, the whole idea behind the estate tax was an American attempt, Sandra, to stop hereditary predation upon the economy.
Right. It's like a social engineering, which is, you know, I mean, taxes, you know, they have the power to destroy, but they also have the power to promote egalitarianism. Okay?
Yeah.
And it's just like this estate tax is another thing that's really doing my head in. I'm like, who is running this shit? The Democrats control all three branches, yet we have a year gap of no estate tax? Are you kidding me?
And you know, whether it's that or no unemployment or the fact that we can't get Barack Obama to actually come down here and, you know, just... On your way to Asheville, North Carolina, or, you know, somewhere when you're flitting around in Air Force One, say, hey, I want to fly over a mountaintop removal site and see what all this is about.
Yeah.
Just do that and come back and tell us what you think. Whether you're for it or against it, just come back and have the common honesty to tell us what you think. All of these things, Sandra.
Yeah, no.
All of these things.
I mean, I'm just wondering, so is this unemployment extension what? So they do have a plan for the before? Because aren't they leaving for a month soon?
Yes, they are.
Okay, so this is a period because, you know, I'm going to be really, really disturbed, angry, and just really overwhelmed if, for some reason, they can't sort at least that out.
Well, here's my cynical view of politics. It's going to be one of those things that comes down to the wire.
Yeah.
And if the Democratic majority can't get it done, then it's okay anyway because they will use it for political hay because, you know, with Labor Day comes the opening of the November political season. And it's going to be all falls. Hey, you know, can't make the mortgage, can't make the car payment, can't keep the lights on, cable got turned off. Guess who did that to you? The Republicans did. Sucks for you, doesn't it? Elect the Democrats. And it's the political coin of the realm in the United States, Sandra.
Right, but I mean, I don't know. I just sort of think that the people in Washington, you know, they haven't confronted, you know, mass destitution in this way where you were once middle class and now you're not, drastic type of changes. I don't know.
This is going to be some political sausage making that is sickening to watch. Because I have no confidence in the Senate's ability to get this bill through.
Well, no, but see, my problem is that it's going to be a lame duck Congress after the election, and that's that whole period when that cat food commission is going to report.
Speaking of, and we all know who's.
What? Don't you? I love that.
Oh, I love it too. The Little Friskies Fellowship.
You know, the cat, you know, it's just like this commission, the deficit commission is so horrible. But anyway.
And you know, Pete Peterson's sitting on it.
No, he's foul. He's just.
Well, and it's another one of those tentacles moments. Are you aware of this biopic about, is it Dick Cheney or Don Rumsfeld, that PBS is going to run?
No. It's probably Don Rumsfeld, isn't it?
I can't remember which. I had it here because I wanted to make... Oh, there it is. Hang on. Just a second. The Nation, yeah. No, I'm sorry. Neither of the above. It's even worse. PBS offering 3-hour Valentine to George Shultz.
Oh, not... Wow. No. That's the head of Bechdel.
Yeah, I know. Isn't it beautiful? This is the funny
thing.
But here's the funny thing. Yeah, with a tiger tattooed on his ass because he went to Princeton, remember?
God, he's hideous. Okay, yeah,
well,
anyway.
They're going to run this hateful, nasty little biopic that is entirely funded by a bunch of his right-wing cronies, at the head of which is, drumroll please, Pete Peterson.
These people, I mean, all they're doing is preserving their oligarch status. I mean, that's the thing that's so infuriating, and it's so infuriating to see the politicians literally just bought.
Well, yeah, but and here's how much, here it gets funner. It's just like the conversation with Richard. This is a Ginsu commercial, Sandra. It gets funner. The title of this thing is Turmoil and Triumph, The George Shultz Years. I think I just hurt you.
Oh, no. See, the thing is, I just don't know if people are aware of just what a disgusting, despicable character he is.
Yeah, it's 2 hours and 40 minutes. And Thomas Jefferson only got 3 hours from PBS.
No. I can't believe it. PBS is just, I guess that's to the highest bidder, huh?
Yeah, and here's what makes it worse. Here are the sponsors of this pathetic piece of triumph of the will sort of Leni Riefenstahl garbage. Peterson, and you know, again, it's one of those, you know, sickening garden party Washington right wing things. Nixon era colleague Pete Peterson is married to Joan Gans Cooney, the founder of the Children's Television Workshop. The Stephen Bechtel Fund gave money. So did Charles Schwab. Where Mr. Shultz served as a board member, and the contributions trail all the way down to Senator Dianne Feinstein, Sandra.
Well, no, it's just like I said. I mean,
bear in mind, PBS is going to joyfully run this.
No,
all right.
Can we say Russia? I mean, what is this place?
Oh, I know. Triumphant. If there's footage of him if there's grainy black and white footage of him flying on a prop driven bomber and landing in a, you know, it's all over. Because it is Leni Riefenstahl at that point.
Oh, God, that's terrible. I mean, that is like one character that I would rather not revisit.
And yet, the onion gets more pungent as we carve into it. I just listed all of those sponsors, right?
Mm.
Okay. Now, there's a documentary out there, and it's brilliant. It's by someone who's a personal friend of mine. Their names are Mary Lynn Evans and Phyllis Geller. And they did a documentary that is absolutely stunning in its scope. It has balance to it. It talks to both sides. It's called Coal Country. We'll be screening a portion of it in Las Vegas next week.
Oh, okay.
Okay. That was supposed to run on PBS.
Oh, and what happened?
Well, PBS said, you know, we don't think we can run Coal Country. Oh, really? Why not? Is there something wrong? Is it poorly edited? Is there a bad voiceover? No, we just recently found out that it was made at least in part with funding from the Sierra Club.
Right, but ADM Supermarkets of the World is okay? Come on.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
No way. They tell people straight face this?
Sure as God made it, I promise you.
Man,
I swear, Sandra.
That's it. I mean, I don't even get how they can even say that to somebody.
Well, do you remember the little palace coup that took place in PBS during the hateful 8 years of George Bush?
Well, when they made,
this is the payoff.
When they made Moyer disappear, and then he returned, and now he's gone again.
Off to the gulag.
Right. Listen, I that reminds me, though, of, and I know this is really trite, but that's how I am sometimes. Come on, man, with the Cheney thing. Is that for real? No pulse?
No pulse.
Come on. That is so creepy. It is so bizarre.
Did you catch Mark Morford today?
Oh, no. Is that guy from SF Gate?
Yeah. Oh, you got another minute?
Yeah, no, I'm fine. Yep.
Mark Morford penned something today called the Great Dick Cheney Empathy Test. And at the top, he quotes a little poll from the Associated Press that says, former Vice President Dick Cheney disclosed Wednesday that he has undergone surgery to install a small pump to help his heart work as the 69-year-old enters a new phase of what he called increasing congestive heart failure. And so Morford writes, here's how it works. You read the story above. You note how Dick Cheney, former vice president, Bush baby daddy, sneer master supreme, befouler of nations, lover of war, hater of wealth, almost everything else, has undergone yet another major heart operation, this time to place a little valve-assisting pump called an LVAD in his withered and long dysfunctional ticker. You then read how Dick is recuperating in intensive care following said installation, which, by the way, is usually only a stopgap measure, just a delay tactic until the device in question gives out and the patient requires a full heart transplant. Is Dick a candidate for that? Doubtful. Also, they say LVADs are usually reserved for patients with end-stage heart disease, a last resort, the final straw. It is, they say, only a matter of time. So it begins. The first knee-jerk response to the Great Dick Cheney Empathy Test, the GDCET, is, of course, the easiest and the most obvious, the most available to your giddy puppy dog consciousness, and my guess is it shot through you like a fast and wonderful lightning bolt of, oh, my sweet Jesus, yes, the instant you read the story above. The response was, shall we say, not very subtle. It was, I'm guessing, a not-so-secret howl to the universe that the sooner Dick Cheney exits this earthly plane, the healthier, lighter, and happier we will all be planet-wide. Dark shadows will lift, flowers will bloom more brightly, 10 million female uteri can finally unclench, and so on. But then, perhaps you sigh, ponder, probe a bit more deeply. Is that how you really wish to be? What are those noble traits we all strive for? Compassion, benevolence, forgiveness, a wan but merciful smile in the face of thine enemy's condemnatory sneer. Is wishing a scaldingly painful death on one of the worst and most shameful characters in American history really the right way to treat your fellow man? Any fellow man? Of course not. Well, maybe. No, definitely not. After all, if you wish such a thing, what does that say about you, about us, about this paragraph? Would we not all be wallowing on the same filthy level? Is it not similar to the death penalty argument so beloved by liberals that no matter how vile the criminal, to wish death upon any human makes us just as base and ugly as those we deem to be evil? This is no way for an enlightened consciousness to evolve. I know what you're thinking. And yes, passing the GDCET would require all your courage, all your gumption, willpower, whiskey, and every ounce of benevolent energy you can muster. You would have to invoke all your Jesus-flecked Buddha nature to turn the other cheek, love thy enemies, forgive the sinners, basically dredge up every maxim, axiom, aphorism, proverb, and Hallmark card you can think of, toss them into a karmic blender, and shoot them straight into your wary soul like a desperate and godly emetic. It ain't easy. Oh, he's a genius. And that's just a little chunk with him saying, you must first resist the very reasonable, insistent screaming of your calmly vengeful side, the one that would be very pleased indeed if Dick suffered a million scalding rashes and burned in hell with Jerry Falwell, Saddam, and Strom Thurmond for all eternity. That would be wrong. Stop thinking that. And you know what? I'm having a real hard time, Sandra, stopping thinking that.
Oh, no, listen. I'm laughing at the fact that Fu has to have paper saying I'm still alive if he passes out.
Not dead yet. Well, you know, those nights that Malloy has sat behind the mic, clear!
Oh, my God. No. See, yeah, well, please. Malloy has been, like, hella funny lately. I guess, I don't know what's going on with him. He seems like he's sort of...
Hey, got a little vacation. It's refreshing.
Oh, right, because shit's been hella funny. Oh, my God. But, anyway, listen. Once again, another conversation with no solutions. What can I say, Bob? It's just...
Well, but you know what? We're not in charge of solutions here.
Well, no, but it's just, you know, I have to take some hope with what, you know, that first email you read, that's great. That's great stuff. You know? I'll hold
and,
on
and
to
you
that.
Know, but you know what? That's what I keep coming to. we got to, and the hope springs from us, Sandra. You know, we sit here and piss and moan and bitch and complain. But at the end of the day, you know, what did he say? You know, be the hope you hope to see. You know, what was it? And we got it. We really got it.
No, I mean, that's like, it's so true. That's why, you know, I'm sort of, like I said, I don't know what Obama's doing, but whatever, he can just go ahead and do. But, you know, we got to turn ourselves to something that's going to, you know, produce some sort of change. This situation is untenable. It can't go on. My goodness.
It can't. And you know, with a little bit of a, I don't know, is Barack Obama nudgeable? I don't know, Sandra. I don't know.
I'm not too sure. I worry. If, you know, I think, I don't know, I want to say he's a lost cause. But see, I'm concerned of the whole one-term-ness. And the only thing that keeps me from really thinking that is that he is, no matter what how he's governed, he's quite good at campaigning, right?
Oh, very much so, and given really good speeches.
And so, you know, I don't know. I don't know. But see, I feel he's on his own, though, because I'm telling you, even people in my family who are like, you know, oh, Obama can't do any wrong are starting to crack. So even black folks are starting to sort of back the hell up, I think. Ever so
well, right. It's like Juanita's conversation with the census worker,
right.
Who was African American, said, "Well, you know, I was a Hillary fan."
Yeah, well, my mother was a Hillary person too. I mean, you know, so I'm just saying that base that he takes for granted, he may want to revisit it because the state of Black America is just stunningly horrible, as you know, on all indicators. So. Anyway, but that's neither here nor there. I'll let you go.
All right, Sandra, have a wonderful weekend. Thanks for the conversation.
All right, you too. Bye-bye.
All right, bye now. And let's see who is where. No. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hi, Bob, it's Cassie.
Well, hey, Cassie.
Hey, I didn't think I was going to get on. Cause
but you did, you did.
Oh, I did. So, I want to go back to the first thing that I heard when I, turned the computer on before.
Okay.
I'm a Subway sandwich artiste. It's what I do when I'm not at school.
Oh, yes, that's true.
Yeah, so, if you think that the bread is not something you want to read the ingredients on, I want to suggest that you, like, don't look at the chicken and the ham and the bologna ingredients.
You know, I will take you at your word. But again, Cassie, you know, bread is so prosaic. How do you screw up bread? Why does bread need high fructose corn syrup? It was still, even that, it was a little shocking.
Yeah. Well, the meat has it, too.
There's high fructose corn syrup in the meat?
Yeah.
How do you get high fructose corn syrup into meat?
Because you call it honey whatever.
Oh, it's honey ham.
Yeah.
With the honey made by little high fructose corn syrup bumblebees.
Right. So, yeah. But you didn't hear it from me.
You were not here. You did not say this. We will carve this part out of the archive. No, not really.
Why are you dissing Princeton?
I wasn't dissing Princeton.
You were dissing Princeton.
Was not. George Shultz went to Princeton and was buried with a Princeton tiger tattooed on his butt. And that's not dissing Princeton. That's just a fact.
Okay. Because pretty cool people went there, too.
Oh, but absolutely. James Madison.
Yes.
Aaron Burr, who I think gets a bum rap, but never mind.
Anyway, I enjoyed the stuff from last week.
Well, I'm very glad that you got a chance to check out some of it. It was amazing stuff.
Yeah, I heard almost none of it live, but a lot of it you had replaying in the evenings.
Right, Agnes was in charge of the replay stream.
Okay. So I heard the replay stream. Anyway.
Anything in particular jump out at you?
Let's see. Well, I loved the fact that I don't remember which one it was, who said that all of them were liberal and that the whole idea behind the country, that like everything that was involved with creating America was to some degree liberal.
Yes, absolutely. That was Dr. Tom Tierney from Worcester College in Ohio.
I really liked that part. And I liked the whole, the storyteller.
Oh, Karen Virage?
Yes.
She's fun. She's a personal friend. I've done theater things with her.
Cool. I like her a lot. And yeah, I liked the way... I mean, she really, brought it alive.
Absolutely. And getting, well, that was just a magical evening with her doing what she did and then Jeff Biggers following up with his own story. It's simply amazing. Simply amazing.
I didn't hear Jeff Biggers.
Oh, you missed a treat.
But you'll have it up on the horn site or on the white room?
Ben is slowly getting it all archived, yes.
Okay. And then the other thing that I liked was there was one of the teachers who was talking about having kids debate things in class.
Right.
And having kids act things out. We did that. I had the most amazing social studies teacher.
Oh yeah, that was Phil Roden.
Okay.
And he has done a tremendous amount of work down in the San Antonio school district, so I wouldn't be surprised if he's had some other impact inside the Texas educational system.
I wonder if my eighth grade teacher didn't take one of his classes, because we debated everything. Everything that we learned about, we either chose sides or she chose sides for us, and we did lots of independent reading and independent research and looking at the primary documents and doing all of this stuff to get ready for these debates. And we would have these in-class debates or in-class court trials or in-class election speeches or whatever part we were learning about.
And you put forth extraordinary effort in your classes, Cassie. Did it resonate as well with your other classmates?
A lot of them, I think so. But yeah, I mean, and especially like. When we got to 10th grade and had the world history teacher, we were all kind of looking at each other and going, oh, I wish we were back in middle school. Like, it was just, because other teachers were just, like, boring in comparison. And the classes that expect that you're going to get 95% of your material out of the book are so bad.
Dull.
Yeah, it's like, just give me the book and send me home for a week and I'll be fine. If I'm going to be in class for 45 minutes every day, then...
You know, Cassie, way back when I was riding my dinosaur to college, I got in real trouble over one of those one time. Because a teacher, I had one of those classes where the professor read to us out of the book for 50 minutes, 3 days a week. And I quickly figured out that I could read the book as well as she could.
Right.
And so that became the class I was not going to go to, and I was going to take the exam, get my B, and go. And she said, well, you know, if you don't start showing up for class, I'm going to cut your grade. I said, if you cut my grade, I'll appeal it, and I will explain to the Faculty Senate why I'm appealing. Because when you start teaching, I'll start attending. But if you're just going to read the daggum book, I got no reason to be here. And she flustered and she blustered, and I said, no, I'm serious. I'm really, really serious. You're awful.
You said that?
Yes. I said, I don't know why you have a job.
What did she say?
She said, oh, well, you know, she told me how disrespectful I was and how ungentlemanly it was. And I said, I don't care. I'm paying for this. I'm taking out student loans here that I'm going to be paying on until I'm as old as you are.
Bob, I'm surprised she didn't fail you right there.
Well, she didn't dare. I think she knew I was serious, and I stopped showing up. And I came, and I took the exam. She let me sit for the exam, and I got my B, and I went home. I didn't care about the subject matter. It didn't interest me in the least. I had to have it for my major. And, you know, the time that she wasn't talking, that she wasn't teaching out of the book, she was talking about her experience as a member of the WACs in the Second World War, for which I have tremendous respect, but I was not paying for 3 credit hours of that. That's the history department. I was in the English department. And this was a class that was all about learning to write in the phonetic alphabet. Not the Phoenician, but the phonetic.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, it doesn't take 4 months to figure that out. You know, I read the book in a couple of weeks, took the highlighter to it, and figured I was okay. Check in, Friday at 8 o'clock in the morning? No, I'm not coming. Now, you don't get to do that. Do as I say, not as I do.
Right.
Because you're going to somewhere that they're not going to have those kinds of professors, hopefully. But in situations where you're paying for your education, I think, you know, to use that hateful word, Cassie, you're a consumer.
Mm.
And, you know, the customer's always right. But, by the way, I was also an ass. I wasn't the sweet and loving and kind person that I am now.
Well... I don't know. I can't.
Well, it took a while for you to come up with a response to that one, didn't it, now?
I'm sorry. I can't. I wouldn't say that to a teacher. But.
The day may dawn. The day may come.
Yeah.
But, no, I understand. But, you know, it takes a lot because I'm a voracious absorber of learning and information and things like that. And you know, what I was putting up with in that class felt like a betrayal of all of that.
Yeah.
And that's why I couldn't stand it. But I'm glad you did it. Well, I think I'm done with Subway.
Yeah. You should, yeah.
And so too soon will you be.
I'm going to do something different for the job when I get to Princeton.
Maybe you won't have to have one.
Maybe.
Or maybe it'll be work study and you can do what I did and sit in the loft of the theater department and count old civil defense barrels and make sure that the iodine tablets are still in them. That was fun.
Okay.
I'm probably talking about something that's utterly irrelevant. Pardon?
Isn't that from the 1950s?
Yes, that's from when we all thought we were going to be nuked and we were going to be protected by getting under our desks. As long as we had 55-gallon drums that didn't have any water in them and some iodine tablets to take all the radiation out.
That doesn't work, does it?
No. Not even a little bit. But we were told it did, and that's what managed.
It's like cough syrup. they tell you it's going to help, but it doesn't.
No, it doesn't. Cre-emulsion just tastes bad and makes the parents feel better. Do they even make Cre-emulsion anymore?
I have no idea what that is.
See? See? But that's okay, because one of these days, you'll be 47, Cassie, and you'll be talking to an 18-year-old who has no idea about the stuff that you're talking about that exists now that won't exist then. iPod? iPod? What's an iPod?
Yeah.
I've got a chip installed in my brain. Don't you have one? Steve Jobs just put the fix out for it the other day. And you know, the 18-year-old will say that to you when you're 47.
Steve Jobs won't be still around.
Oh, I don't know. He can always move back to Tennessee and buy himself a new liver. He did that. He did that, you know.
By a heart. Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Can you by a heart?
Well, you know, Mark Morford says in his column that he doesn't think Dick Cheney is a candidate for a heart transplant, but the fact of the matter is Dick Cheney probably is, because Dick Cheney has the money to be one. It's the Steve Jobs story. I mean, let me just flesh this out real quick. You know, Steve Jobs had pancreatic cancer, but it was one that was operable. But it didn't fix the entire problem, and a couple of years later, he had to have a liver transplant. Well, he looked around, and he finally found somewhere that would do one for him, but he had to be a resident of the state of Tennessee. So he bought himself a house in Tennessee and leapfrogged ahead of God knows how many others on the liver transplant list in order to get himself a liver, and then moved back to Cupertino, California.
Did he buy half of a hospital or something?
You know, I don't know what he did for Memphis State University's medical school, but there was probably an anonymous donation somewhere along the way. I'm speculating.
See, I think Dick Cheney will go the other way. I think Dick Cheney will go and get a heart from someone in Guantanamo that they don't even know.
Right. Well, I think Dick Cheney will just go and gnaw it out of somebody's chest, or maybe get an obsidian blade like an old Mexica priest and rip it beating out of their heart at the top of the pyramid.
He's evil.
Yes, he is. I mean, his blood has evil cells in it. They've got little E's inside the cells where the nucleus ought to be. Just pure evil.
And his daughter's almost as bad.
I hope
nobody gives her a job in government.
No, she'll run for a job in government. And then some Republican will make her assistant secretary of being really mean to poor people.
I hate Republicans.
It's kind of easy to do. But bear in mind, you know, you're going to a place where you're going to meet a lot of them. Muffy and I were just sailing up at Nantucket the other day, and I said to her, Muffy, I don't understand what it is with these poor people.
Now, I'm not going to be the only one there, though. Who's on scholarship. I'm not going to be the only one there.
No, you won't, but you will be there among a bunch of people who are paying cash and got in not because they busted their butts to have good scores on the SAT or the ACT and worked their rear ends off for 4 solid years in high school and sweated every hard class. You're going to be there with a bunch of people who did not do that, who got in because daddy had a tiger tattooed on his butt. I mean, that's just the reality, Cassie. And you will know them almost immediately.
And, I mean, I don't understand how people don't have compassion. Like, I understand people who are miseducated and people who think that, you know, they believe stuff on the radio. And, you know, like, I understand people who just don't think about it more than a minute in their life. What I don't understand is people who just don't have compassion for anyone.
No, they have compassion for themselves. They have compassion. Here's a phrase we can invent. They have situational compassion. For instance, during the Bush presidency, if George had choked to death on a second pretzel and needed the Heimlich, that situation would not call for compassion from his vice president, Dick Cheney. Dick Cheney would not have given him the Heimlich maneuver.
He would have shoved more pretzels in.
Have another pretzel, George. Because the situation did not call for compassion. If, on the other hand, his heart surgeon is choking on a pretzel, Dick will hire somebody to do the Heimlich because Dick can't do it himself. Because Dick, on the situation, needs to be compassionate to the surgeon because Dick needs the surgeon. It's strictly utilitarian. It is purely commercial, totally transactional, and utterly, utterly sick.
And don't these people know that they need regular people? Like, our country can't survive without
regular people. Yeah, but there's lots
of us.
No, but there's lots of us. There's millions of us. The Dick Cheney class looks down at the other 99.9% of the country. And when you're talking about numbers like that, there's darn near 300 million. There are enough of us to be wholly, completely, totally, and utterly expendable.
And we'd fight back if we weren't busy watching television.
David in Tennessee reminded me of something, offering his own bit of wisdom, which I think is profound. Take this one to heart, Cassie. David says, Cassie needs to understand that she cannot win her life's battles in 4 years of college. She will win her life's battles in her 50s as a Supreme Court justice or as the President of the United States.
I like that.
Tack that one to your wall. Cassie, got to run, dear. Have a wonderful weekend.
Okay.
You got any sandwich artisting to do this weekend?
Yeah, on Sunday.
Sell them the flatbread. Nah, it's probably got high fructose corn syrup on it, too. Take care, Cassie.
Good for you. Even the salad's not good for you.
No, it's sprayed down with something god-awful, and it's got rocket fuel in it, too.
Yep.
Later, dear.
All right, bye-bye.
Bye. And let's try to work a couple more in. Hey, welcome to the program. Yes.
I'm sorry for calling so late, but I just wanted to tell you a couple of little tidbits about Joy Behar.
Yes, please.
Anyway, I saw The View the other day, and they had Laura Ingraham on there.
Who has a new book out called The Obama Diaries. I saw a little bit of it today. It is absolutely vomit-inducing.
Yeah, and she was interrupting everybody, and Joy kept looking at her. And then she said that the book was a series of papers that was put on the top of her car, and she didn't know if they were true or not, but she felt that they should be put out there. But anyway, then she went on and she brought up and she said, well, this is the book I'm going to be promoting from now on. And it had a picture of Joy Behar with the same title. And Joy Behar said, no, no, no. She said, you don't do that. She said, I don't want people to think I know you or you know me. And I said, God bless her.
Absolutely.
And then on her other show, her regular show last night, she had, they were talking about, those tapes with, what's the name of the guy? Anyway,
O'Keefe?
No. The movie star.
Oh, Mel Gibson.
Yeah. Anyway, she has like these little panels on sometime, but she had Stephen Baldwin on last night. I didn't see the very first part of it, but she was bringing up about those tapes and all, and he said, well, Joy, you're just judging him before you know anything about it. He said, you're judging, said, do you think you're perfect? And she says, yes, I do.
Good.
But then...
Well, has Stephen been redeemed yet, or whatever that website was about?
Well, he's still redeemed. You know, this is what he said then. He said, well, I don't know why that you hate us Christians, Joy. And boy, Joy sort of went ballistic. She said, what? You're calling me? I'm a Italian Catholic, and you're telling me I'm not a Christian? How dare you say that?
Ooh.
And you know what? He finally apologized. But then he's saying that this guy's been set up. Because, you know, the right wing, they love him.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, the, absolutely.
And him talking about her judging him, then he brings up and says, well, she's setting him up. Well, he's judging her.
Was that her doing his voice? I mean, or did he really say that?
He really said that.
Yes, he did. So it's kind of hard to say that that's a setup. Juanita, okay. I hate to do it, but I got to run, dear.
It's hot down here. I woke up after 8 o'clock, but I wanted to tell you that.
Well, I appreciate it, Juanita. You have a wonderful weekend, and do please stay cool. Take care.
Okay.
Bye now. Oh, mercy. The lights keep blinking up and starting up. I'm sorry. The show can't go any further. I apologize. I do want to share one thing with you that Texas Betsy sent along just before leaving. You know, we've had a little bit of food porn on the program this evening. And I did mention to you that I'm trying to get Anthony Bourdain back on the show 3 years after his first appearance, his triumphal first appearance. He's got a book out now called Medium Raw. It's a really fun read. And he's got a chapter in it called Lower Education. I think I shared this with you. He says he hates McDonald's. He despises McDonald's. And it's one of the reasons that I like to watch. My wife and I are speaking in hushed tones directly outside our daughter's bedroom door, where we're sure she's pretending to be asleep. Shh, she can hear us, says my wife with a theatricality intended to sound conspiratorial. Nah, she's asleep, I hiss, a little too loudly, a stage whisper. We're talking about Ronald McDonald again, bringing up the possibility of his being implicated in the disappearance of yet another small child. Not another one, gasps my wife with feigned incredulity. I'm afraid so, I say with concern. Stepped inside to get some fries and a Happy Meal and hasn't been seen since. Are they searching for her? Oh, yes, they're combing the woods. Checked out the Hamburglar's place, but, of course, they're focusing on Ronald again. Why Ronald? Well, last time, when they finally found that other one, what was his name, little Timmy? The police found evidence on the body. They found cooties. And Tony says, this is just one act in an ongoing dramatic production, one small part of a larger campaign of psychological warfare. The target, a 2.5-year-old girl. The stakes are high, as I see it, nothing less than the heart, mind, soul, and physical health of my adored only child. I am determined that the evil empire not have her, and to that end, I am prepared to use what Malcolm X called any means necessary. Somewhere in America tonight, Anthony Bourdain is laughing maniacally. Headline, McDonald's accidentally puts condoms in Happy Meals. 5,000 Happy Meals were distributed with colored condoms instead of a plastic toy from the movie The Last Airbender. I'll leave you to write that joke. The condoms were intended for the Provincetown, Massachusetts school system, which recently established a policy making them available for students of all ages. They were delivered to McDonald's distribution center in Barnstable, Mass. In error. Quote, the packages were so bright and colorful that they were mistaken for small toys for Happy Meals, but unfortunately most of the workers do not read English and thought ribbed latex was a character in the movie, said Robin Anderson, vice president of public relations for the chain, as published by El Universal of Mexico. The mistake led to an incident in a Brewster, Mass. McDonald's, where more than a dozen 8-year-olds attending a birthday party all opened their condoms at once and immediately blew them into balloons and started batting them around the restaurant. The McDonald's incident also caused problems in Provincetown, where the schools accidentally received the restaurant's shipments of Last Airbender's toys, and several were released to students who went in to their school's nurse's office seeking condoms. So get up and get away to a place that, well, at McDonald's. God, that made my day when I saw that story. More, please. So that's the program for tonight. Thank you very kindly for joining in. We will be back Monday night. Remember, the People's Mixtape, Volume 4, 7 p.m. tomorrow, as well as Rick Smith live, I tell you, on the Horn Stream at noon on Saturday and Sunday. Thank you for all of your kind contributions. What you can do, if you can do, and can do it without hurting yourself. These are dry and dry times. It just is. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. There's a tab called Contribute. There's a snail mail address, and there is, of course, the PayPal button. Thanks to those of you who have chimed in with a kind contribution during the course of the program. Thanks always go out to everybody who helps make this program happen. John Fox, our chief engineer, webmaster, web designer, host of All Foxed Up. As soon as we find an appropriate slot for the program, when John's schedule settles down. Thanks to Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. He never slows down and never stops working. WhiteRoseSociety.org. Ben is a hero of liberal talk, and I wish more people would say that than just me. Well, just me and Mike Molloy. Thanks go out also to Peter Godbold, our IT professional, and to Lottie, our moderator in the chat room, to our news ninjas, Gene and Susan, to our blogger, Texas Betsy, Matt Osborne, osborneinc.com, is our Southeast correspondent. David in Tennessee is my head writer. All of this happens also because of the partial sponsorship of Coal River Mountain Watch. When you hear stories like the young master, Cart Goodwin, you know the kind of struggle that Coal River Mountain Watch is engaged in, and it is uphill all the way. Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net and coalriverwind.org, the hardest working, bravest people I know. Have a happy weekend, y'all. We'll be back Monday. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you.
Conversation cussing and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy!
I'm back in the home studio, relaxed and a raring to go. This is the horn. This is Thursday. And you know what? We got about 9 hours of conversation before Agnes and me and the kids start having to sing Bingo Jed Had a Light On. No, that's Big Old Jet Airliner. But, well, who can tell? Steve Miller's singing anyway. But we've split for Netroots Nation in Vegas in the wee, tiny, small, itsy-bitsy hours of Tuesday morning, trying to figure out that, you know, I'm just hoping they seat us all together, because I figure if I'm in the middle and Margie's on one side and Doodle's on the other and I'm holding their hands, because they've never been on an airplane, and Ferg is in the next seat up holding Agnes's hand because she's never been on an airplane, we might be okay. I think there will be copious quantities of Dramamine passed out as well. Only not until we're on the plane for Vegas from Cincinnati, because it's hard to drag Dramamine zombies through airports, trust me. But we've got 9 hours of conversation between now and then, and I hope you will take advantage of it, and I hope you will help me along. Because, see, I'm just sort of getting loose from the 18th century. And I say that warmly and lovingly because it has been a magnificent time these past couple of weeks being able to sit in on and broadcast.